Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
Today is July 5th, 2013, and this is episode 31. Kickstarter Revisited.
Kickstarter! You get caught up in a Kickstarter. Kickstarter!
And can I just say that it is lovely to be here talking to all of you folks out there in Internet Radio Land today. It feels like we haven't done a full proper episode in much too long. So, just to sort of be clear here, because of some behind-the-scenes drama... I only had a couple of hours to structure this show. If we seem a little bit messy, maybe a little sloppier than usual, I apologize, but hopefully we can still have a really good time today and talk about some good stuff. Thank you for listening. Anyway, I really appreciate it. And the show that we were going to be recording today that we had the issues with will still be coming. It'll just probably be sort of in the last week of this month, probably just prior to our live convention debut at the Gamer X convention in San Francisco, where, as you may recall, we will be appearing live with the boys from Koopa Club,
Game Bar, and OLR / Hordehouse
to talk about gay podcasting and stuff. So it's going to be awesome. Podcast Cross Zone.
How dare you?
I know.
How very dare you?
I know, right? So please look forward to it. Please look it up on the GamerX website over at GamerConnect.com. That's a .com, right?
Yep.
Delightful. And, you know, cool. Thanks for participating. Thank you for listening. You are awesome.
Cool!
We're going to rush through our news segments a bit more hurriedly than usual this week. You know, a lot has really happened in the 3 weeks since we last recorded a full episode. And while, you know, I do sincerely hope that you listen to GameBuoy Micros Part 1 and 2...
GameBuoy Micros Part 1 and 2.
If we tried to cover everything that we missed in that time span, this would be another one of our three-hour episodes that we tried
to... Let's be real, it might push over, like, that anyway.
So, yeah, thank you for being here with us, and... Let's get it started.
Get the party started on a...
Stop!
Not Saturday night.
Stop! Why don't you take this first follow-up for us?
Okay, Sony Online Entertainment has confirmed with Polygon, although this article is actually from Joystick, that DC Universe Online and PlanetSide 2, which are both Sony Online Entertainment free-to-play MMOs, will not require a PlayStation Plus... subscription to play on PS4. You know, there was a little bit of confusion after they announced that multiplayer would require PS Plus on PS4. I almost said that backwards. But, you know, that they... Yoshida-san actually was the one who said that it's the publisher's decision to put it inside or outside of the PlayStation Plus requirements. So, that's good. I mean, you know, I subscribe to PlayStation Plus anyway, so, I mean, I honestly didn't think that was that horrible of a thing, especially because Xbox Live has been doing online multiplayer since forever, so.
Yeah. Well, you know, the interesting thing about this news is that it really sort of bucked the trend of what I think a lot of people were expecting, which is, of course, that, you know, the... MMOs that do have, you know, pay subscriptions, would end up, you know, sort of double charging. And, you know, while I think a lot of PS4 owners will probably end up being PS Plus subscribers anyway, it's still cool to know that they won't have to have subscriptions to both to play these games.
Exactly.
We also have a report here, and I don't want to take too long on it, but according to Joystick, it looks like Microsoft Xbox One games, so, you know, the first-party games on Xbox One at least, are going to remain at the currently accepted price point of $60 per game.
$60? That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, if we hadn't complained about it, maybe Microsoft would have introduced a flexible pricing model, blah, 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 blah.
I know that this next one is going to be one you want to talk about, so why don't you take this next one? That's my gift to you.
Thank you. Pokemon Rumble U has a new batch of figurines, and the cool thing is that they are all legendary. This new set of figurines includes Mew, Celebi, Jirachi, Deoxys, Darkrai, and Shaymin. And actually, there's also a seventh rare figure, which is Genesect. God, there are so many legendaries now that I'm just like, those are a legendary Pokemon?
Yeah, right? I just want Articuno. Where's my Articuno?
Yeah, I don't know.
Fun fact, my first Articuno was named Coma White after the Marilyn Manson song.
Interesting.
That remains, to this day, my single favorite Pokemon ever.
Well, maybe you can recreate it in X and Y.
Maybe I will.
Just find a way to get a Articuno up in there. So this is kind of cool. The Australian government is going to be giving $6 million, presumably Australian dollars, I don't know exchange rates, sorry, over the next 3 years to indie developers. So, you know, apparently the Australian gaming industry is kind of struggling, but, you know, the Screen Australia is what it's called, and they are an agency of the Australian federal government supported film, television, and video game production. And, you know, they really want to give these indie developers a chance. So, you know, hopefully that will be cool. I have to admit that I really haven't heard of a lot of these developers before, but, you know, maybe we will hear more from them with the $6 million. That's a lot of money.
That is a lot of money.
Unless the exchange rates are not so great right now, in which case that might not be a lot of money. But
it's,
I think, like, that's
equivalent to like $6.
Oh, I don't think that's that bad.
No, I that was hyperbole.
But you know, Australians always have to pay more for their consoles, don't they?
I believe that's true. Yeah,
that's a shame.
It really is.
I feel like you want to take this next one.
Well, actually, you skipped one, which I'm going to talk about right now.
Oops.
We don't have a link to a blog on this entry, because this is compiled from information I found off of Twitter at the Retro Game Challenge, event of some kind, or, you know, Game Center CX, event, like, press event. So we won't have a link to this on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
But there is going to be a new Retro Game Challenge / Game Center CX 3DS game. We talked about that a little bit previously here on Game Buoy. Namco Bandai will be publishing it this winter in Japan. Although they did acknowledge that it's possible, since this project still has a lot of progress to be made, that it may slip into the 2014 release schedule. It's being made by G-Rev, whom you might be familiar with from all of their really popular bullet hell shooters. It's not being made by Indie Zero, who made the last two Game Center CX games. You might also be familiar with Indie Zero's work on some of the Square Enix 3DS games and DS games. But regardless of G-Rev making it, this is not, strictly speaking, going to be a shooter. Although, you know, there will be shooter games, because that's how these Retro Game Challenge games work. You know, there's a lot of, like, mini-games based on older NES-style genres and what have you.
Yeah, they're really cute.
So, yeah, that concept is staying the same. So, please look forward to it if this comes to the U.S., and obviously I have my doubts after Retro Game Challenge 2 failed to make it over. But if it does come out, please support it, because those games are so much fun. It's just really great, and if you're listening to this show, it's very likely that you would really enjoy Retro Game Challenge, both the show and the game. moving on.
Now, this is the one that I thought you would want to take, because you have fond memories of this.
Well, you know, the Dungeons & Dragons Chronicles of Mystara release. We've been talking about that a lot over, you know, the last several episodes now. In Japan is going to be getting a PS3 retail release, so not just digital, you know?
Yeah, at this point, I think it's probably been out for a while, because this was from mid-June.
Yeah, well, I...
Whoa. It's getting very festive in here.
It comes out in Japan in August, so no, it's still not out.
Oh, I'm sorry, I was misreading this article that was talking about the... North American releases.
Yeah. The North American release is out. In fact, I already own it on multiple platforms, and as soon as it comes out on Wii U, I'll own it on that as well.
I'm a little jealous because this retail release that they're getting is
it's
pretty
great.
Cool.
Well, one thing in particular that it has that I really like is that it has a color edit feature, so that you can, you know, edit the palette of your player characters. So, like, they have here, like, a warrior that's all wearing pink armor and stuff that
they
made during color edit. There's one who made their armor look all gold. So, like, that's really cool. Like, that's a great feature. It adds, like, a Street Fighter II Champion Edition style, like, two players picking the same character. There's also, like, a whole house rules system of, like, dip switches. In order to toggle features, like making random damage allocations happen differently and like changing the state of breakable weapons. Like, there's a lot of options here that are not in any other version of this game ever.
Yeah, that's kind of like making me jealous.
Yeah. So that's really cool. And I really hope at some point, I don't know, like maybe we get a patch to add these features to the digital download version that we have. Cause that'd be really nice. Moving on, if you would like to take this one, I need water.
Yeah, speaking of water, Nintendo has announced that their first free-to-play game is going to be Steel Diver, which is the submarine shoot-em-up strategy simulator. And, you know, they're still kind of working out the details of, you know, if they want to do microtransactions or some sort of subscription, but that's interesting. You know, I'm assuming that this is going to be a Wii U Steel Diver. I mean, I guess it could be another 3DS title, but I'm not really sure. It sounds like they're still working out the details. Captain Spike, do you have anything to offer?
You know, I'll be honest, and this is complete just speculation. I expect that we're just going to see Steel Diver stripped down the same way that Tank 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 was stripped down for the free-to-play version of Tank Tank Tank.
Oh, yeah.
I think that we'll just get, like, the core sub and, like, the first level or two, and then everything else from there will just be microtransactions. So, like, if you're super hooked on it and you want more tracks, oh, buy the track pack. If you're hooked on it and you want to use other subs, oh, buy the sub pack.
Now, do you think it's going to be another 3DS title, or do you... because, you know, they didn't say what platform it was for, so do you think it's going to be another 3DS title or a Wii U title or possibly both?
I would almost expect both.
Yeah, I mean, you know, how many people have 3DSs, it seems silly not to. And they probably have all the art assets and everything.
Well, literally, the game exists already. But, again, Tank Tank Tank, as I understand, is reasonably successful on Wii U as a free-to-play game. Obviously, we don't get a lot of those numbers, like hard numbers, but just observing the Miiverse, it looks like people are playing it and trying. So I have to assume that Nintendo would see that and want to bring their free-to-play offering to that platform as well.
True.
But, you know, again, speculation. We'll see where that goes, where that ends up.
So another PlayStation Plus-related news for PS4 is that a PlayStation Plus subscription will not be required for auto updates. So, kind of just more information emerging about the things that PlayStation Plus will not be required for. So, that's good. And, you know, of course, Netflix and Hulu are not PlayStation Plus things. Hint, hint, Microsoft. So, I mean, you know, I think a lot of people were just kind of worried about the, like, oh, now we have to pay-to-play online gaming. But it's like, you know, you were doing that on Xbox anyway, so.
Yeah, well, and, you know, especially here with the auto updates and everything, you know, that's a feature that is currently on PS3. But only for people who have PlayStation Plus. So that's really why people were concerned that this would be a feature that they had to pay for on PlayStation 4.
Agreed. Joystick had a cool article about the HD remake, really. I mean, I can't even say it's a remaster. It's a remake of Castle of Illusion starring Mickey Mouse. I mean, it looks great. I don't really want to spend too much time talking about it, since you should just go over and read it if you are a fan of Castle of Illusion. But, you know, it looks really, really pretty. And, you know, I'm really excited for this as well as DuckTales, so I'm hoping that it hits very soon.
Excellent. Yeah, I don't really have a lot to say about that specifically. But do you know what I do have a lot to say about? apparently, according to an ad that was running on GameStop.com a few weeks ago, it looked... the Final Fantasy X/X-2 HD Remaster will apparently have a limited edition box.
Ha 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 ha!
We don't yet know what's going to be in the limited edition box, although obviously speculation remains that it might be the Yuna costume for Lightning Returns Final Fantasy XIII, but we don't really know.
That would be cool!
Speaking of costumes for Final Fantasy XIII, and this isn't on our show notes, so I'm bringing it up sort of artificially this way, Square Enix also announced pre-order DLC for Lightning Returns Final Fantasy XIII, which is a dress sphere, or, you know, that game's analog of dress sphere, of a soldier from Final Fantasy VII, complete with cloud-style buster sword.
Oh, wow.
So,
presumably that's for Lightning, though. So
she'll just
be, like, doing cloud cosplay.
Yeah, like, she has, like, a little cloud hair with the costume on. There's pictures online already.
Oh, my gosh.
It's pretty awesome.
So she's Lady Cloud.
Yeah, well, I mean, she already was, but let's be real.
Well, let's be real. Lady Cloud was in the, like, Honey Bee Inn or whatever it's called.
That's Lady Boy Cloud.
Yeah.
So, yeah, please look forward
to
it.
How come we didn't talk about that on our LGBT episode?
I'm pretty sure we did.
Did we?
I think we did. Well, if we don't, we will on the next one. You know, now that we're already into the habit of repeating topics, if we're revisiting Kickstarter, maybe we'll just have to revisit LGBT issues.
Maybe so.
Well, this
I feel
is
like
good
you need to take this next one.
At least we'll have decent recorded episodes on these topics now.
Yes.
Womp, 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 womp.
Hey, don't hate on early game, Bowie.
I'll hate on what I want. Whatever, whatever. You know, this is a topic that I want to bring up. This is something near and dear to my heart, but it's, you know, sort of twofold. During E3, Square Enix conducted an internal interview with Tetsuya Nomura-san, about which Nomura was answering questions about Kingdom Hearts HD 1.5 Remix and Kingdom Hearts 3. I don't really want to talk too much about any of these points, because if you're interested in Kingdom Hearts as a series, chances are you've already found this information yourself. But for those of you who are only casually interested, or maybe are not really that interested, but are really into, you know, gaming as an art form or what have you, it's worth mentioning that Kingdom Hearts 1's original data has all been lost.
Yeah, that was really interesting to me.
You know, and we hear about this a lot every few years, about how games are losing, source code to game is games lost. And, you know, these games are lost into the sands of time for forever. See also Panzer Dragoon Saga, that's probably the easiest one to call off the top of my head. So it's really fascinating to see that for Kingdom Hearts 1, they had to recreate the game.
I mean, it looks gorgeous, but I mean, now it's like, oh, well, you know, they just basically had to redo everything.
Yeah, well, I was reading a lot about how they were importing animations and character models from other current Kingdom Hearts games, Dream Drop Distance and Birth by Sleep and what have you. And now it makes a lot of sense. Like, oh, if all of those assets were lost completely, then of course they're just going to use what they can from the already existent stuff.
Yeah, and it looks like it's going to probably be, you know, the most gorgeous Kingdom Hearts game to date, so
I'll believe it when I see it. I thought Birth by Sleep was really beautiful, so anyway, I'll be happy to be wrong. Drakengard 3 has finally gotten a Japanese release date announced. It is going to be October 31st, and it
Happy Halloween, bitches!
Oh my god, right? It comes in a super gorgeous, like, limited edition box
set. It is so pretty.
So, if you're in Japan or you import games, please look forward to it.
Yeah, it looks gorgeous.
Here, this was sort of a hot topic for a minute. Injustice: Gods Among Us, the DC fighting game, had its fourth and final for the season, as they have said, DLC character released. This was, of course, General Zod from, you know, Superman, in particular Superman movies. And with the release of this DLC character, finally all of the DLC available for this title has all been released on Wii U.
That's great.
The reason why this is interesting, of course, is that prior to this, none of the DLC had come out for Wii U. The other platforms had tons and tons and tons of DLC, whole new characters, new costumes, all kinds of stuff. And Wii U had no DLC. And now Wii U has all the DLC. So, still not really sure what the holdup was, but I also don't really care. I'm just really happy that, you know, to see that sort of platform parody.
Definitely.
Parody, not parody.
No, I followed.
It's also worth mentioning, on a related note, that the Deathstroke Challenge Mission DLC for Batman Arkham Origins, which previously had not been announced for Wii U, has now been announced for Wii U as well.
That's so great.
Yeah, maybe WB Games was just not on the Wii U DLC train, and now they are. I don't know. I don't care. I'm just really glad to see that this is the case.
Very exciting news for us at Game Boy, and probably for a lot of you. Killer is Dead is going to be hitting the U.S. on August 27th. That's not too long from now. So just in another month, well, a little under 2 months, you'll be able to play the new Sudo Goichi game, which looks super crazy good. And all copies of Killer, all launch copies, I'm sorry, of Killer is Dead will have an art book, soundtrack disc, and a download for the Smooth Operator DLC pack. So I'm obviously getting my copy at launch.
Yeah, me too. I'm a big fan of everyone involved in this game. I want that soundtrack CD. Akira Yamaoka is a big, you know, I love that guy's work. So, super excited.
And
super,
Europe super excited. Will be getting this identical version on August 30th. So, you know, just a couple days later, as per usually the usual?
Really?
Well, you know, sometimes Europe gets things before us. Like Earthbound on Virtual Console. But usually they're like 3 days behind us.
Oh, and talking about Final Fantasy 13, one more time. but this is our last follow-up of the day. So, you know, we're following up something we just talked about 5 minutes ago. There was a new Lightning Returns Final Fantasy 13 trailer released yesterday. And I am super, super, super excited to say that Fang is in it.
Fiercest Bish.
Yes. Truly the fiercest of Bishes. Final Fantasy XIII Lightning Returns releases in the U.S. on February 11th, 2014. And I can't wait. I'm going to pre-order mine probably like today because I want that soldier dress sphere.
Yeah, really. And I mean, I know that 13 hasn't been the most popular, but I think that it's been a good franchise.
I like 13 a lot. I like 13 too a great deal. So yeah, I'm here for that.
Yeah. Well, I think that brings us to one of our longest lasting news segments. Which happens to be
news. 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 Oh my god, news.
You're awful. I hate you so much. I mean, hey, welcome to Oh My God News. First up for you, we have a very interesting story here. Don't want to spend too much time on it, of course, because it's very likely that you've already heard about this.
I'm just living for this.
Oh my god, Avast. No, I am not resubscribing my free service. Stop.
So this news is so lol that even Captain Spike's antivirus is like, nope.
Ah, right. So Don Matrick, whom you might recall as being sort of the focal point the figurehead of the Xbox One announcement and subsequent kerfuffle, has resigned from his post at Microsoft and is going to be moving forward to his new role as the CEO of Zynga.
Is it Zynga or Zynga? I never know.
I've always said Zynga. Zynga or Zynga. The social games company confirmed this in a blog post, and it, you know, pretty much does what it says on the tin.
Oh, well, I hope that works out well for them.
You know, and this seems to me very much like a case of jumping from the frying pan into the fire, which is, in fact, the exact same simile or metaphor, whatever that is, that Joystick ran with. Thanks, Mr. English Major. Finally came in use for something.
Yay!
But, you know, CNBC and Kotaku reported on this, so credit to Kotaku. CNBC upgraded Zynga's stocks to a buy now that Matrick is with them. CNBC's analysts seem to think that if anyone could ever possibly turn Zynga around, it's gonna be Don Matrick.
So basically, Zynga has been upgraded from toxic sludge to rancid garbage?
Well, no, this is actually more like from toxic sludge to, oh, we expect them to be tomorrow's belle of the ball. Like, this is like a very hearty, like, yes, get all in, buy it while it's low price, because it's going to shoot back up.
We'll see.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, that's sort of how the market works, but it's interesting that they have so much faith in him. But whatever, I mean, I guess there's probably an argument to be made. Would you like to take this one? I know you like Pokemon.
Yeah. Well, this isn't actually Pokemon news, but it is Pokemon-like, because the Bravely Default Flying Fairy studio, which is Silicon Studio, they are putting out a game called Monster Tact. And it's a world that was, like, desolated by the Demon Lord, and so you have to...
I just want to point out that tact in this context is referring to the batons that they're using. Those are the same conductor batons or tacts that are used in Wind Waker.
Yes.
Which is why Wind Waker was at one point called Tact of the Wind. I'm sorry, continue.
And you use these tacts to calm the hearts, corrupted hearts of these monsters. And, it looks really cute. You know, Pokemon likes are kind of a thing these days. You know, between Puzzle and Dragons, and Level 5 has Yukai Watch coming out for the 3DS. I can't say Japanese ever. So, yeah.
But you keep trying.
Yeah. So this looks really cute, and, you know, hopefully we'll see it make a stateside release. And British release for you Europeans. And mainland Europe release for the rest of you Europeans. Sorry.
You're awful. And you're not really awful.
You know, it kind of looks a lot like Puzzle and Dragons.
Yeah, that's... Well, I'm looking at this. That's definitely...
I forgot to mention that it is... Like Puzzle and Dragons, it is a mobile game. So, you know, some people are like, but, you know, it looks really cute. The reason I say it looks like Puzzle and Dragons is because when you evolve your monsters, they go back to level 1.
Oh, so. Interesting. Well, I like that a lot, so.
Yeah. So, I'm hoping that we'll get it on iOS and Android devices, so.
Let's cool! See. I'm really, really passionate about this next one. MechWarrior Online's open beta is finally coming to an end.
Oh, wow.
The game has been in open beta since October.
Wow.
And, you know, they're finally ready to proceed with the version 1.0 launch on September 17th.
Cool. That's exciting.
Yeah, I mean, just I'm really excited, but kind of does what it says on the tin. I don't have a whole lot more to say about it. Oh, this is very interesting. According to Famitsu this week, Chaos Rings, the somewhat fairly popular Square Enix JRPG mobile game, which is sort of meant to be like a full-fledged console JRPG for iOS and Android, is going to be released on the PlayStation Mobile service soon, as well as a Tokyo Jungle Tactics spin-off. This is, of course, most interesting because PlayStation Mobile support is offered by the PlayStation Vita.
Yes.
So these games should be playable on the Vita.
The screenshots have been described as Final Fantasy Tactics with gazelles and Pomeranians.
Oh, yeah, for Tokyo Jungle, yeah. I can't wait. That's going to be great. That game has already been confirmed for a release in the U.S.
Yes!
Chaos Rings has not yet been confirmed for release in the U.S., but it will be releasing in Japan by the end of July. And Tokyo Jungle Tactics, I believe, was meant to be released in the next week or two, so...
That's great.
Let's see. On somewhat related but somewhat sadder news, the PS3 and Vita dungeon crawler Warrior's Lair, which you might recall was announced back at E3 2011 as one of like the first cross-play games that was announced, has now been canceled.
Aww.
This was back then named Ruin, if you remember, and just been canceled. It's really, really a big bummer.
Yeah, that sucks.
Prince of Persia 2, The Shadow and the Flame, is being released on iOS and Amazon.
And Google Play.
Oh, and Google Play. On July 25th. This is, of course, a mobile version of Prince of Persia 2 with updated graphics.
Yeah, looks good, and it's only $2.99. That's not a lot of money.
If you'd like to take this next one.
Yeah, there are... two awesome Pokemon X and Y 3DS XLs coming. One of them is a super pretty blue one with, like, the letters X and Y in the background, and Xerneas and Yveltal, the legendary mascots, on it. But the one that is even more gorgeous is a gold one that has... Does it have both of the legendaries on it? I only see Yveltal on it. Oh, yeah, no, Xerneas is on the front. The deer-like thing is on the front with the three starters. And, like, these tree blossom things. It looks so pretty. But that one, unfortunately, is going to be only at Pokemon Centers. So, super, super rare. Which sucks, because that's, like, the super pretty one.
Yeah, that looks like some straight-up Hayao Miyazaki art right there. Like, that's incredible.
It made me think of, like, what do they call that? Woodblock painting, almost? I mean, not really, but, you know. Very, very beautiful. So, you can see both of these over at GameBuie.org. We'll link you to the Kotaku articles that show the pictures, and, you know, if you can get your hands on one of those gold ones, Captain Spike's gonna be calling you up.
Yeah, I mean, I probably won't announce my intentions to come and steal your 3DS. I'll just come steal it.
Rude.
Oh, you.
So do you want to take this next one? I know that you really want to.
I mean, you know, it's kind of a one-word news post, but Final Fantasy VII has finally released on Steam.
That was a lot more than one word. Did you mean one sentence?
I did mean one sentence. Shut
Oops.
Up. You're awful. I hate you. Just for that, you can take this next one.
Okay. You know, this is actually something that we touched on in my recent appearance on Orange Lounge Radio. Hopefully all of y'all listening to, and if we have any new OLR listeners, hey. A League of Legends player, was being super ignorant and made a joke about going to shoot up a school and got thrown in jail. And if convicted, he could face up to, I believe it's 8 years. Yeah, 8 years in jail. But people on the online internet are trying to send in a petition. I don't know if it's like change.org or whatever, but, you know, saying, you know, he learned his lesson. It is actually a change.org petition. They're like, he learned his lesson. He you know, was being ignorant. And... apparently what I had heard is that, like, the parents were like, oh, well, he doesn't watch the news and stuff, so he doesn't know about that. I'm like, doesn't really help the fact to paint him as being super ignorant. And also, yeah. I'm sorry, how do you, if you're online playing League of Legends, you don't mean to tell me that you don't know about, you know, the tragedies that have happened.
If he didn't know about the tragedies that have happened, he literally wouldn't have had the information required to have made that joke.
Yeah.
Like, so, I'm sorry, but your argument is a complete failure. Don't get me wrong, I don't really think that this is an appropriate sentence, necessarily.
That's kind of what the weirdness is, that people are like, you know, it's effed up, but does he really deserve 8 years for making a joke?
Well, but again, it is an inappropriate joke to make. It's an awful, really insensitive, I would say cruel joke to make. That is a joke beyond even a now, joke here's, that here's, I, in all my heights of bad taste, that right. joke even I would not make.
You know, the interesting part of the story, actually, for me, is that a anonymous Canadian woman backtraced him with the cyber police on the interwebs.
Be a backtracer! Backtracer!
And consequences were never the same. As much as I may joke about that meme, you know, this is kind of a messed up thing that, it's a very messed up thing that happened, but, you know, a lot of people are like, you know, all that really needed to happen were him to be scared shitless by having the cops show up at his door.
Yeah, I mean, really, I think that probably, I don't think that this kid is going to be rehabilitated by spending 8 years in prison. And, you know, this
yeah,
is
it's
not,
a touchy, it's kind of a touchy,
this is not politics buoy, so I won't bore yeah. you with my feelings on, you know, sort of the institution of imprisonment. But, I don't think that justice is well served. I don't think punishment is well served. I don't think that this is really the right way to fix this issue. So, yeah, I'm actually kind of with those change.org petition folks. Despite the fact yeah. that I do think that the joke that this kid made was unforgivable.
And also, change.org can be kind of meh. You know, if you're interested in hearing more about this, Dark Sakura over on OLR, on episode 510, which is what I was on, she had some really great things to say. Basically, summed up in, don't be a douche. But she said it a lot more eloquently.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, and you know, I have to credit Kotaku for writing a fairly decent article on this.
Not a Lotaku, for once.
Yeah, yeah, no, so we'll link this Kotaku article on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
And that'll be that.
And we have a fun piece for the last news. Do you want to
cover this one? Up on a brighter news story here. The Denpa Men 3 has been announced for release on 3DS in Japan. This will be releasing on the eShop in Japan on August 7th, and it is, of course, the sequel to The Denpa Men and The Denpa Men 2. They come in waves.
Aww.
The quirky, cute JRPG series that is sort of half Dragon Quest, half Pikmin, as I've heard it described. I don't quite know that I would describe it that way, but I would describe it as very pleasant and very strange.
You know, I was thinking of the words quirky and cute myself, and I was going to say that it's quirky and cute in a sincere way, unlike Zooey Deschanel.
Is it raining?
Siri, is it raining right now? I need recipes for tomato soup. God, I hope Zooey Deschanel is not listening to Game Movie.
I hope she is. I like you.
Yeah, Zooey Deschanel, I liked your first She and Him record, but the last
okay, no,
one
that's
was kind of...
Yeah, now we're being catty.
I'm just saying that I thought that the first She and Him record was a lot better than the second one. So, with that,
get caught up in a Kickstarter!
Well, I mean, I was going to basically say that, but... go ahead.
Yeah,
so we should talk about why we're doing another Kickstarter episode, I think.
I don't think I want to talk about that at all. Let's just talk about some Kickstarters.
No, I think we need to talk about why we felt it was necessary. And, you know, not to get too Game Buoy meta, but...
Why did I think it was necessary? Because I had to come up with a new show in the course of 2 hours?
No, but the thing is that it's kind of funny because Captain Spike and I had both been kind of talking about, like, oh, hey, this is actually something that we might want to talk about. And we both agreed, so...
Well, yeah, you know, it's, we've been looking at a lot of our earlier episodes and thinking about how, you know, our listeners in the community could be well served by sort of revisiting some of the topics we covered in sort of the early days. You know, obviously,
you know, when the,
gotten a lot better about how we present this information to
back
you.
Back when the SS Game Buoy was just a little yacht.
Yeah, well,
not
you know.
A yacht, what am I thinking? A dinghy? A little
we
dinghy.
We have mics that work now, so that's a pretty big change.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's been a year since, you know, Double Fine in particular, because they're sort of the easy case to point to and say, oh, this is where ground was broken. This is where the paradigm shifted. And, you know, in that year, sort of a lot has changed.
Yeah.
A lot of these Kickstarters have come to fruition or not. And so this seems like a really good opportunity to sort of seize and put our best foot forward and take a look sort of at how sort of this handful of maybe 15 Kickstarters that we singled out here and have talked about in some context over the last year, whether it be strictly during our Kickstarter episode or not, sort of follow how these Kickstarter projects have progressed, which ones shipped on time, which ones shipped successfully, which ones were major bummers. Probably as I say these things, you're already thinking of sort of a couple famous flops that come to mind. Which will, of course, be the second part of this conversation, sort of some kick lollers, as it were. And then we have a few asides, you know, because there were also a couple of really high-profile Kickstarters about sort of games and the games industry that weren't strictly games themselves.
True.
So let's get this Kickstarter conversation
kick-started.
I was working my way through it. Sidekick, why don't you tell me right now what you think about Double Fine Adventure, which is now known as Broken Age?
Well, I mean, the first thing I think of is the fact that just the other day, which is kind of what led us on this Kickstarter revisited, train of thought, is that, you know, they apparently, with all the money, how much money did they raise? I'm not good with numbers and figures in that sort of way.
Millions. I mean, the short answer is millions.
That apparently was not enough money to fund or, you know, to support the grand vision they had for Double Fine Adventure, Broken Age. And as a result...
So, and I'm sorry to cut you off, I'm just going to give you the numbers and then I want you to continue. Their funding goal was set at $400,000 and they got $3.45 million.
And that apparently was not enough, and I'm not trying to pass any judgment here, but that apparently was not enough to fulfill their vision. And so what's happening is that they are going to be putting the first half of the game up on Steam Early Access, is it called?
Steam Early Access,
and then the rest will come a couple months later. The alternatives were to delay it until, like, 2015, I think.
You know,
was the
and
year
I have
I
to say, the
out.
Math of that still doesn't make sense to me. Like, how, by releasing the game early, do you cut 6 months off of your timeline?
Well, Sonic 3, Sonic and Knuckles was released in the same way. Obviously not on Steam, but, you know, it was split up into two games, so.
Well, yeah, but do you really suspect that if they hadn't released them together, that they would have been released together even later? Like, I don't get it.
Yeah, I wasn't trying to really play devil's advocate there, but I'm that's just what it makes me think.
Don't get me wrong. If they need more money, they need more money. It is what it is.
You know, the interesting thing is when I was reading this, I thought all the way back to the article that spurred our original Kickstarter conversation, which was on the PA report by Ben Kuchera talking about kind of the risks of Kickstarter. And I feel like one of the things that he talked about were like that people who are... And now, to be fair, a lot of these were directed at, you know, like, very small development teams, like, you know, 2-3 people who do not have the background that a company like Double Fine has. But, you know, one of the things I seem to recall him talking about was that these little small indie groups, you know, that, because there's so many Kickstarters out there for games that, you know, and I've even pledged some that are just very,
basically just two dudes in an office putting a game together.
Yeah. And, basically, the point I'm trying to make is, Ben Kuchera was saying that, I don't know if he was talking to someone or if he himself was just saying this, that a lot of these smaller teams don't really understand, the financial part of, like, how much it actually takes to create a game. So, I mean, it's just interesting to me to see Double Fine run into this. I mean, did they really think that $400,000 was enough? So, I mean, that's kind of what I'm walking away from this from, is that, you know, Double Fine is a studio that has experience making games, obviously. So, you know, I'm kind of wondering, like, did they really think, if they had such a grand vision, why didn't they just, you know, make their money level higher or whatever?
Well, you know, it's something that...
I mean, they really... I think... Sorry, go ahead.
Something that I think needs to be said is that I've felt for a long time that Double Fine and Tim Schafer and them... And I don't mean this in a slanderous way. I don't mean this to be liable. That is not the context with which I say this. This isn't a disparaging remark. But I have heard, you know, that even dating all the way back to the old classic adventure games, that, you know, these guys would often end up with sort of, sort of designing more than they could afford to make. And then having to sort of pull together the pieces and scraps in order to make it work toward the end of the development cycle. And so to me, this is just that. They saw that they got, you know, $3.5 million from backers, so they inflated the scope and scale of the design of the game, and then ultimately ended up inflating too much, and now they need a little more money.
Yeah.
I don't know that I think it's good or fair or right or what have you. This isn't a value judgment. I'm not excusing it. But I think they just saw, oh, hey, we can make an even bigger game. And then they went so big that now they've overshot where they needed to be. And, you know, it's one of the things about this that I'm really happy to see, and I don't really know how to contextualize this correctly, but I'm just going to say it. Is that I'm really happy because a lot of gamers, people who are reading game news now that never were before, I think a lot of these people are now seeing the realities of how game budgeting and budgeting your time and budgeting all of your resources during game development, how all of these things come together.
That's true.
And resultantly how easy it is to come in over budget. Because you hear a lot of people saying things like, Bayonetta, for example. Oh, Bayonetta must have cost too much money for a studio the size of Platinum. And like, oh, maybe that's true, but it's, you know, I certainly couldn't say one way or another. I understand Platinum to be an extremely efficient studio, but it's easy to look and say, oh, that game must have cost a lot of money. How did they budget for that? And, you know, the reality of the situation is a lot of games come in over budget because if you don't have a game that looks expensive, people in this marketplace will not buy your game. And so yeah. To some degree, Broken Age probably fell to that. You know, they probably felt that, oh, we have $3.5 million. People are going to expect a lot of game from us over this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's going to end up being great. You know, and I think to kind of contextualize it, this really was kind of the first big gaming Kickstarter, like you said. And I was reading somewhere that... somebody compared it to Radiohead's In Rainbows album, which was kind of the first pay what you want thing in the music industry.
Yeah, a watershed sort of moment.
And so, you know, maybe it can kind of be chalked up to more that, you know, this was the first Kickstarter that Double Fine had done. And, you know, they didn't know what they were going to get. And they got a lot of support because people really love, you know, Brutal Legend, Psychonauts, and all the other great games that they put out, so, you know.
I love Brutal Legend, but I don't know that I would call that game well-loved. I think it was widely looked down on.
Well, because, I mean, in kind of a more niche sort of way.
Yeah, I think a lot of people didn't get the game
that
expecting Vagrant, out of that.
In the way that Vagrant Story is well-loved.
Oh, yeah. a smallish group of really, really, really devoted fans.
Yeah, that's what I meant, but...
Well, I am one of those people as far as Vagrant Story goes, so I totally see what you're saying.
And you are also one of those people as far as Double Fine goes, I would say, right?
I am, and in particular, Brutal Legend. I actually really like that game.
Yeah.
I love its aesthetic, I love the soundtrack, I even like the weird real-time strategy bent the game takes later on.
So, you know, it's easy to be like, oh, Double Fine is just being selfish, but honestly, I think we do have to look at it in the context of, you know, this was really the first big gaming Kickstarter from, you know, people that we know. And, you know, the thing is that Brutal Legend, for example, that had that faced all sorts of issues with budget and drama. Was it EA that they had drama with? Activision? I don't remember.
There was some drama. Let's
so, you know,
it started with Activision, and I think it ended with EA.
Yeah. The point being, Double Fine, they've been around for over 10 years now. They've dealt with stuff. They'll be fine. But something that's kind of interesting is that this news just emerged at the, not at the same time, but shortly after they launched, well, shortly after they finished their Kickstarter campaign for their new game, Massive Chalice.
Well, and that's something that, you know, I actually came in here ready to rail on Double Fine for that reason. It sort of surprised me that as I was talking about it and thinking through it, that I sort of came down on Double Fine's side. Because I felt it was really disingenuous to wait to tell your fan base about your financing issues with your previous successful Kickstarter until a few days after your new Kickstarter is done. In his open letter to the fans about the progression of Broken Age and the requirement for more money, Tim Schafer had referenced how they've previously tried to make more money by pre-selling the game through humble indie bundles and what have you. And so it's clear that this is an issue that they've had sort of in their vision for weeks, if not months, that they'd need more money. So, again, it seemed really disingenuous to me to wait until after they were done asking for money for Massive Chalice to then say, oh, you know, by the way, Broken Age still needs more money, too.
Yeah. So it's kind of a double-edged, double-fine sword, so to speak.
And, you know, the tricky thing here is, I do understand that game development is tricky. The kind of games, the level of detail that Double Fine works to, that we know they'll work to, the quality of writing that we know that they will just, you know, keep working to achieve. These games, both Broken Age and Massive Chalice, when they release, are both going to be great.
Yeah.
I really strongly feel like these titles are really going to be amazing. It's just this sort of, you know, development cycle shuffle that is really kind of unpleasant. And I think they probably could have made some better choices about communicating to the fans about where their money was going and what have you.
Yeah. And I mean, that's kind of what I was going to say, but then I didn't want to interrupt you, is that, you know, the communication is really the important part of a Kickstarter campaign, I feel.
Well, it's funny you say that, because this is the perfect segue. Do you know what Kickstarter campaign I feel has really excelled on the level of communication?
Which one?
Project Eternity.
Ah. Why don't you talk about that a little bit?
So, you know, Project Eternity, we've talked about it here on the show quite a few times. This is the new Chris Avellone game. Or is that Avalon or Avalon? I have not been able to pronounce this guy's name for like.
It could be 10 the plus double L years. Could be like Avalon.
But this is considered the highest funded crowdsourced video game on Kickstarter. The Kickstarter campaign ended just a hair shy of $4 million. This is of course the new Obsidian Entertainment RPG. Made in the same vein of its spiritual successors, or ancestors, sorry, Planescape Torment, Icewind Dale,
oh, just a little game Baldur's called Gate. Baldur's Gate.
Yeah. So, and the reason it's not tied into any of those aforementioned Dungeons & Dragons games is that they want the setting to be a new IP, they want to own it, they want to be able to build on the ideas from there in future games.
You know, something else that was kind of neat about this one is that they also got further funding through PayPal, which was an additional, I think, probably looks like about $200,000. So basically, they raised more money through PayPal than Little Kim did for her last record, probably.
Best-selling RPG ever sold through PayPal.
Ah!
So, but to me, the really interesting thing here is that I feel like the Project Eternity guys, I feel like I have an email from them in one context or another about the game. I would say probably, like, once a week, once every 2 weeks. Like, I feel like I hear from, get information about this project.
That's great.
Very often.
Even if it's like, oh, hey, here's a little, here's a screenshot from.
Well, exactly. Or, oh, here's a render of an enemy we just finished today. Or, you know, something like
that. Just be like hey,
that,
we're but... still here, we're working, we're putting your money to good use. Thank you for your support.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because if you had told me last year that I was going to have, you know, concerns about Double Fine, but not about Project Eternity, I would have been like, no, you're crazy.
Yeah.
But this has really been an eye-opener that these Obsidian Entertainment guys have really,
you know,
outdone themselves.
It really sounds like the way, not to be music buoy, but the way that Amanda Palmer really was communicative with her Kickstarter campaign for her recent record.
Well, yeah,
it's... And it just goes to show that if you're going to be raising this sort of money on crowdfunding, you really need to be very communicative and that people expect to hear from you.
Yeah, I think that in a lot of ways the rule book is still being written, but I definitely feel like, you know, there's a... oh, pardon, frog in my throat. I definitely feel like there's a right way and a wrong way emerging. And these first two entries that we've talked about today, I really feel have shown, you know, sort of right way, wrong way.
Yeah.
One that I am currently really in a very negative place about thinking about is Shadowrun Returns. This game, of course, just recently got a release date announced.
I think it's August-ish. We're not release date buoy typically, so sorry.
Well, so Shadowrun Returns is going to be releasing on July 25th.
Okay, so I was a little bit off.
And I'm not going to harp on this too much, because I know we've talked about sort of the weird DRM-free version, version that they're doing of this game. But that has definitely left a very sour taste in my mouth.
But that sucks.
But it does release July 25th, so, you know, that's just a slight delay, I would say, from, you know, what I was expecting when I backed this project. So good on them.
Yeah.
You know, some of those other Kickstarters that we were talking about earlier in this episode, you know, just 5 minutes ago, you know, they were sort of projects that are a bit further out. But that one and sort of the next couple ones we're going to talk about are out, already out, or just on the cusp of coming out.
Yep.
And so, you know, it's really good to see that. I know there was a lot of trepidation early on in the Kickstarter fad or boom. I should say boom, because fad implies that I don't think it's going to last.
Yeah, we don't want to be doing a follow-up this time next year being in memory of Kickstarter.
But, you know, I'm really happy to see that of the projects we're talking about today, quite a few of them appear to be things that are in people's hands or will be shortly. And so, you know, Shadowrun Returns, that obviously applies since, you know, just 3 weeks away. But this one, which I just saw on Steam on sale the other day, so it's definitely out, is the Leisure Suit Larry HD remaster.
I heard that. I've heard good things about that one.
Yeah, I read a review of it after I saw it on Steam. You know, I had backed it for just like a small token amount because I was having some cash flow issue. And couldn't back it for enough to get a copy of the game. So I was looking at it, and I was thinking about buying it, and I was reading reviews, and it looks like it's an extremely accurate, like, basically one-to-one port in terms of functionality, gameplay, and puzzles and stuff.
That's great, yeah.
And that's what I want out of an
HD remaster.
And, I
mean, Leisure Suit Larry was kind of, I feel like we touched on this on our adult gaming episode. That was a franchise that kind of had been going downhill for a while, hadn't it?
Yeah, like Love for Sale and what have you, like some really just awful games coming out of that series.
Yeah, so this, I mean, that's an interesting way to think of, you know, we've talked about the Double Fine ones, which are new IP, like totally new IP, Project Eternity, which is kind of more of a spiritual sequel, and then Leisure Suit Larry, like relaunching a franchise. So it's kind of interesting to see Kickstarter being used in gaming for these different ways.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, another Kickstarter project that I want to talk about is, of course, GameBuoy Indie Darling, FTL.
Yeah.
And, you know, I say GameBuoy Darling.
Which was a what's up for you, I think.
Well, yeah, this was actually like a whole entire internet gaming darling. FTL, great little game, roguelike in space. Got funded, you know, pretty well. I know that we had some listeners who backed it. In fact, that was how I got switched onto this game.
Yeah, Game Buoy super fan Dan Diaz.
You know, he name dropped it, had mentioned us that he had, I think, played a game with a ship named the SS Game Buoy or something.
Oh,
or
yeah.
Maybe he had crewmates named after us or something. And it's something very cute. I remember being very, very impressed and very pleased. And, you know, so that obviously, you know, that game got funded, it came out on time, and really was an example of the sorts of opportunities of doors that are being opened
yeah.
for independent developers by Kickstarter.
Now, this was one that you picked up on Steam, right? So you did not pledge for this one because...
Well, exactly so, yes.
Because you kind of missed the boat, or missed the spaceship, so to speak. But yeah, I remember you really liked that one, so...
Yeah, yeah. You know, I don't have a lot to say about this one. I included it here because it's definitely a good talking point. But, you know, another Obsidian Entertainment Kickstarter happened. This one for Wasteland 2.
Borderlands 2?
No, Wasteland 2.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, Wasteland is one of those things where I'm not really super familiar with the original game.
Well, kind of was the predecessor to, like, Fallout, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, that's my understanding. In fact, I was just going to make a joke that I was going to get crucified by our games. But my understanding is that the setting and concept of Wasteland is what became the basis for the Fallout series.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, it looks like, you know, people who are involved with Wasteland... wanted to come back and revisit that universe and make a new game.
Kind of seems that Obsidian's MO for Kickstarter is, hey, revisiting the past. But although in this case, they're actually relaunching an old IP as opposed to just doing a spiritual sequel. But
well, and to me, I think there's a lot of merit to that sort of use. For Kickstarter, because, you know, how many times has a well-loved, well-received game by, you know, the sort of gaming masses ended up not getting a sequel because it wasn't profitable enough for the publisher to stick with it? And, of course, the two easiest examples that come to mind are only just now no longer valid. Of course, I'm talking about, like, Mirror's Edge or Bayonetta.
Mm-hmm.
You know, both of these games, which, if not for somewhat extraordinary circumstances, we wouldn't be getting sequels to. So all of the games of that quality that people loved but that did not have publisher backing, I feel like Kickstarter is a really fantastic opportunity for a dev studio to say, oh, hey, our publisher doesn't want to fund another game. How do you all feel about it?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think what we're seeing with Wasteland 2... with Project Eternity, is that people want to give their money in situations like that. Like, I loved this original game. I loved this game that, you know, this spiritual ancestor. Here, take my money so that you can make a sequel or a follow-up. I want that. And I think that's a really fantastic use of Kickstarter. I have to be honest. I am definitely on board with that use of it.
Yeah. You know, not to veer from our show notes here, but I noticed that you left out one that we've talked about on Game Buoy. Which means we probably don't need to talk about it much, but Dreamfall Chapters is another.
Oh yeah,
another one. I was just thinking about that. That
falls exactly right in that same window of what I was just talking about too.
You know, that's Ragnar Thornquist, formerly with Funcom, or is he still with Funcom and just kind of doing his own thing too? I don't really know what his relationship.
I don't think he's with Funcom anymore. Although he did work on Secret World, as I recall.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was an amicable split, from what I recall, when we talked about that. But, yeah, another one that looks great and, you know, kind of the continuation of a not necessarily huge, but definitely well-loved by its passionate fans franchise.
Yep. Let's see. I want to talk a little bit about...
I see a lot of adventure games. I'm kind of just thinking about this. A lot of adventure games.
Yeah, yeah. Well, kickstarted. You know, that adventure... genre is one that a lot of publishers had deemed dead and, you know, impossible to,
mm-hmm.
sort of fund and make a profit off of. And a big part of, I think, Kickstarter in gaming has been to say, like, no, these publishers are wrong. People love adventure games and absolutely want the opportunity to buy them. They just want to buy them real and pure to the original spirit of these ideas, not watered down for the masses in sort of a sludge of, like, ideas all mishmashed together and homogenized to the point of not being super interesting. And again, I don't mean to, like, ramble on about, you know, indie and, like, oh, sellouts or any of that.
I mean, because really, when you think about it, Telltale has kind of been the only one who has actually been successful, not Kickstarter, as far as, like, adventure point and click, sort of that, sort of a...
Well...
You know, but Telltale
kind
of does...
That's sort of my point, is that a lot of these, a lot of these games, a lot of what people want out of them is for them to be weird and quirky. And so that, to me, is just sort of why that was a talking point. I don't mean to ramble or rage. Like, I think it's fine to, you know, if you're trying to sell a game to a wide audience, I think that you got to do what you got to do. But by the same token, I think that part of the joy of Kickstarter is that if a developer wants to release a game that is only going to appeal to a handful of people, they can just go straight to that handful of people and say, oh, hey, do you want to give us our money so we can make this for you? And that's what we're seeing happen, I think. This next one, and this was rather high profile, because the game nearly failed its funding. I mean, sort of only just in the 0 hour did it succeed, is Republic, which is, of course, a stealth action survival horror game, originally announced for iOS, but since expanded to also the PC and Mac platforms.
Interesting.
This is, of course, the pet project of Ryan Payton, whom you might be familiar with from Metal Gear Solid fame, working with Hideo Kojima directly.
So someone who knows stealth.
Well, yeah, exactly so. And, you know, the game, as far as I'm aware, is still scheduled to release in September of this year.
Cool. You know, that kind of, you talking about Kojima-san, you know, that connection there kind of is interesting because... you know, a lot of these Kickstarters we're talking about are people that, you know, like Double Fine, Obsidian, you know, people that we know and trust. That's not to say that, you know, little boutique games by one or two people are not to be trusted, but, you know, it's kind of interesting to see the trend in these, the really successful Kickstarters. I mean, I guess it's not a surprise, really, but, you know, just kind of seeing that, you know, people are more willing to support these because there's less of a risk. They think there's less of a risk associated with a known name or entity. So, you know, interesting. But not surprising.
So, now getting back to sort of a game that has been was funded, has been released, and actually had a really good reception, is, of course, Gianna Sisters' Twisted Dreams. Which was, of course, funded under the name Project Gianna. I backed this myself. I was a big fan. It was released on... It was released on PC initially, but my understanding is that it's coming to or that it's also come to Xbox Live Arcade and PlayStation Network.
That's great.
And supposedly it will also be coming to eShop.
You know, it's just, I've looked at the screenshots for it, and it's just really interesting to see how something that was really, like, literally a Mario clone.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the controversy with Gianna Sisters was that, like, it basically the level design on some of the levels were, like, identical, right?
I'm pretty sure that everyone remembers the history of Gianna Sisters.
Anyway, just to see that it's evolved into...
Oh my god, I'm so sorry. If there's anyone out there who's not familiar with the legacy of Gianna Sisters, this would probably be a good opportunity for us to give you a real quick history lesson. So the Great Gianna Sisters was a platform game from 1987. It was released on the Amiga, the Amstrad CPC, Atari ST, MSX2, and Commodore 64. With Commodore 64 being, you know, a specific port done by, like, one guy, as was fairly common back in the day. And it was, I mean, you can tell it's right there in the name, Great Giana Sisters. Like, this was a straight, like, it was basically a one-to-one clone of Super Mario Brothers. There was, of course, legal issues. And, you know, as far as I know, there was not an actual lawsuit, but copies of that original Great Giana Sisters game became difficult to find due to, you know, sort of the threat of pending legal action.
You know, and they continued to push the envelope with Giana Kart, Giana Sunshine, and Giana Galaxy as well.
None of those things existed, but I wish they did.
But anyways, the thing is that it started out as a straight-up Mario clone, but the art I was looking at for the, not Twisted Sisters, Twisted Dreams, Twisted Sister.
We're not gonna take it.
That's what I was thinking, too. Anyway.
Man, I feel like we basically are Music Buoy today.
Yeah, really.
This game has a really cool, light world and dark, I'm sorry, like, awake world and dream world mechanic.
Very pretty 2.5D sort of look. Not necessarily a 2.5D game, but just kind of that perspective. It's almost, I would say it's kind of isometric, right?
Kind of. And she, you know, the Giana sister that you're controlling, has, like, special powers based on whether she's, like, cute or punk. And it's just really cool. Like, I really like games with that sort of like, light and dark mechanic. Even stuff like Ikaruga.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Soul Reaver. Any game with that sort of mechanic. Like, I'm here for it. So, yeah, great game. I'm really happy with it. I backed it. I could not possibly be happier with having backed this game.
Yeah, you know, maybe there'll be more Project Giannas in the future.
Yeah, in fact, I almost feel like there will be because of the success of that. And that's what I want from Kickstarter. Although, certainly, it would also be nice if a real publisher just approached them and published their games, since obviously people want them.
Yeah.
I had to pull this next one up on Kickstarter because there was an update that I want to talk about, like, today.
You know, speaking of Ikaruga, I heard from someone that there's a My Little Pony / Ikaruga crossover fanfic.
I don't think we're fanfic buoy, but that's incredible. Like, why would anyone cross that over?
It's probably crackfic, let's be real.
Probably.
Anyway!
So, the next game I want to talk about is Mercenary Kings. You probably heard about this game. It was very visible at the PAX events this year. It's basically a Metal Slug game that's being made by the guys who made the Scott Pilgrim downloadable game that Ubisoft published.
Yes!
It looks really great. It has that same incredible sprite work going on. Just looks really good. I backed this one, and there was a backer update just yesterday. Hopefully it's okay that I'm reading this out loud, but I don't care. I don't think it was backers only. This game, Mercenary Kings, is going to be hitting Steam Early Access July 22nd.
I just saw that on Joystick.
Oh, good. That means I can back this. And this is good. You know, they're a little behind schedule, but they were planning to release in May, and now they're releasing in July. So July 22nd. That's great. And, you know, they're going to be working on adding additional levels after that. That's why it's at Early Access.
Yeah.
Like, the game is playable now, and, like, it's good to go. It's an experience. But they're still adding to it.
Yeah, that's what makes Steam Early Access kind of a cool concept.
You know, I have a lot of problems with Steam over the last couple of years, but Early Access is not one of them. I think Early Access is great. I am here for that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I don't have a lot necessarily to say about Mercenary Kings, except it's a project that I think looks really good.
It's by people that making it. Yeah.
They've been super communicative. Since September 13th, I see that I have gotten 23 updates from them.
Wow.
So they're basically sending out updates every, what, like 2 weeks or something.
And, you know, Scott Pilgrim versus the world in the game.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny. Again, I find that the Kickstarters that I feel the best about, again, as we discussed, and as we will talk about again a little later on, are these ones where, again, there's been a lot of communication. I see that progress is happening.
Mm-hmm.
I have a really good feeling about, like, oh, once this game comes out, like, every time I see pictures of it in these emails, I'm really excited for it. Once it comes out, I am eager to play it.
Definitely.
Now, this one is sort of the opposite point for me. Super Retro Squad, which I have bemoaned here on the show. Not because I think the game's in any danger. I am absolutely confident that this game is going to come out.
Just you want it now.
I want it now, and I feel like there's not a lot of updates about what their current status is.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I guess that's just how some people work. We have gotten updates from them. We've even gotten other games from this studio.
I mean, that's a really small team, too, right?
Yeah, my understanding is it's just a handful of people that live in an apartment together, basically.
Yeah, so...
But, you know, we've talked about this game a lot of times in the year plus of our existence. I'm really looking forward to this game existing. It upsets me a little bit that they made Super Mario Bros. Crossover 3 when they could have been working on Super Retro Squad. But, again, that's sour grapes on my part. They're, you know, they're a little behind schedule now, I guess. I think we're supposed to release earlier this year, and I think now they're looking at the end of this year.
You know, one way to look at it, though, is that if they put out Super Mario Crossover 3, and that experience will make Super Retro Squad a better game, then at the end of the day, it's not necessarily a bad thing.
Excellent.
Just a thought.
Yeah, well, and they had said previously that part of... why in a backer update, they had talked about how they're trying to leverage the popularity of Super Mario Bros. Crossover to increase awareness of Super Retro Squad.
Mm-hmm.
Because Super Retro Squad is really them taking the next step into that sort of door that they opened with Super Mario Bros. Crossover.
Right.
So, you know, I get it. I get where they're at. They're trying really hard to make these games and make two games successful when they're just, you know, a handful of people in an apartment.
Yeah. Interesting to see that they're the second Mario clone that we're talking about on Kickstarter.
Oh, yeah, huh.
Although I wouldn't say it's so much a Mario clone as much as a Mario homage and tribute.
It's like a pastiche.
Yes.
Next one I want to talk about is A Hat in Time. I was really delighted to see this game come to Kickstarter because I feel like it had been floating around on the internet for literally, like, years in advance. Before this game came to Kickstarter, where it was successfully published for several times what they, you know, were asking for. And now we have, you know, coming soon, a Wind Waker visual-style Banjo-Kazooie collect-a-thon 3D platformer with multiplayer on its way. It basically looks like a Nintendo game that isn't made by Nintendo.
Yeah, it looks really cute.
I've been looking forward to this game for a long time. In the context of this discussion, I only bring it up just to bring up, like, oh, this is a game that they've been trying to get off the ground for years, and now because of Kickstarter, they're going to be able to make it, and they got a ton of money to do so, and that's great.
You know, something that I thought was interesting is that... the studio, the head of the studio that did Hat in Time, was very, very open about kind of his design. What am I want to say? His design, not design concepts, but his design intent. Because he was saying that, you know, that for a collectathon, that it needs to be there needs to be a healthy balance, and he cited Donkey Kong 64 as an example of. The game that overdid it.
I'm happy you said that, because I thought you were going to say he cited Donkey Kong 64 as a game that got it right, and I was just going to be like, girl!
You know, another person who's been really communicative about his design goals and intention is John Schaefer with At the Gates. And, you know, he, of course, has experience with Civilization, which is a Game Buoy much-loved title, although not necessarily super left-of-center.
But, no, I mean, that's, it, you know, in its way, it's left of center, but it's as high profile as a game of that genre could possibly be.
That's true, but, you know, we love Civ, particularly Civ 5, and I really like the way that John Schaefer has been really communicative about the design of his games. Not to mention he's super fine.
Yeah, no, he's really, really good looking. But further than that, since March, when this Kickstarter ended, I've got 24 updates on this game. Since March, like, that's what, like...
That's for At the Gates, or...
For At the Gates, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, you started talking about John Schaefer and how communicative he is, and it's like, yeah, I've gotten 24 updates since March.
Yeah, and I mean, like, that guy, I have to not call him a kid, because he's actually a little bit younger than us. I mean, just to think of all of
But really successful and super fun.
Yeah, he's super good-looking guy, super smart, and, like, a super forward-thinking game developer. I mean, it's kind of like when you look at, like, music that you like, and you're like, oh, God, I'm older than that person.
Or, like, how even the youngest Jonas brother is a legal adult and pretty fine.
Something like that, but, yeah. We're big fans of John Schaefer here. John Schaefer fan club.
Whoop, whoop. Did we talk about Shovel Knight?
We didn't. I mean, we have in the past, but not yet today.
Well, let's finish talking about At the Gates, because I was going to talk about At the Gates after Shovel Knight.
I want to show up at John Schaefer's gates. Hey!
Oh, girl. He's going to have to get a restraining order on us.
Oh, I hope not.
But, yeah, I'm really excited about At the Gates. That's another one where, because John Schaefer is so communicative, I just feel really good about the money I put out there for that project. Cannot wait to
play
the game.
It feel like he's your buddy being like, hey, I'm showing you like my design notes.
Yeah, it's just really cool. That. I don't know that I quite feel that same way.
I just want him to be my buddy.
Well, .. I am really excited for that game. It's supposed to be coming out in June of next year, and it's, you know, because I get these updates so often, I wish it were sooner.
Yeah.
That's my only problem with that game.
Now we have Civ 5, A Brave New World, coming in just
on
a
Tuesday.
Few days. Oh, it's Tuesday? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, like, we're going to be playing that probably around the time this episode goes up, unless you get it up quickly.
No, actually, I'm going to get this episode up super quick.
Oh, well then, by the time people out there in Internet Radio Land are listening to it,
I've said that on air, and now it's like, sorry, I got delayed by 3 weeks getting this episode up.
Oh my gosh, right? And then we end up with two episodes up the same day when we finally record.
That will not happen.
Secret next episode.
That will not happen, don't worry.
But Shovel Knight.
It's one we've talked about a couple times because of the awesome musical contributions of Manami Matsume-san from Mega Man 2 fame, and Jake Kaufman, a.k.a. Vert, who, of course, you know, is very well known for his work with WayForward games, including DuckTales Remastered.
Yeah, and, you know, Shovel Knight was great because it got, like, they had asked for $75,000. They got, like, $300,000. So it's coming to Wii U, it's coming to PC, it's coming to 3DS.
Yeah.
It's bringing, like, a whole Mega Man meets Metroidvania style of game, you know, to with all of these really classic, like, music from like, real, like, you know, Mega Man composers.
Yeah, and I mean, again,
I am so excited about this game, I can barely talk when I'm
Sean Velasco was from WayForward, so, you know, again, trusted name, even if you're not familiar with him specifically.
Yeah, since April, I've gotten 26 updates about Shovel Knight.
Wow.
And again, I think this is a trend that absolutely holds. The games that we're super positive about, the games that we love, the ones that we're like, oh my gosh, I can't wait.
It looks so cute.
These are the ones we keep hearing from the developers on. We keep getting told, oh, this is where our progress is, this is where your money is. So that's great. And this game is supposed to be coming out just in September, and everything I've seen in their updates makes me feel like this is probably really going to come out in September.
Yeah, it just totally looks like a medieval Swords and Sorcery Mega Man. Basically.
Yeah, I
so
cannot
cool.
wait. And you know, I'll probably end up double dipping or maybe even triple dipping.
Triple dipping.
Because I really want to support this game super bad, and I want to be able to play it on my PC and on my 3DS on the go.
And Wii U.
And Wii U. I mean, I don't know that I need it on Wii U, but
if you're in the living room and your 3DS is charging on a table that's, like, not close enough, but
you're being a bad influence right now. I have literally had people that listen to the show call me out on, like, too many things.
You know that you need to expand into another screen on your Wii U. Your Wii U menu.
And can I just say, for any of those of you out there that have ever called me out on Twitter, because, you know, I'm super active on Twitter, and been like, you buy too many things, I just want to say, my wallet thanks you. Like, you're totally right.
Honestly, at least it's not crack.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, that's why I used to always tell my parents, like, hey, it's okay that I'm spending all this money on comic books and video games, because I'm not doing drugs.
Yeah. Well, you know, winners don't do drugs.
Oh, it's wait. Some drugs.
So.
Oops.
Don't do drugs, kids.
Don't do drugs. Drugs are bad. Okay?
Okay.
Yeah, Shovel Knight, we're really excited about it. Cannot wait to play it.
Yay!
It needs to come out soon. And moving on to the last of our regular discussion, I saved it because while it is the last, it is certainly not the least, and I feel like this is the one that we're going to have the most to say. Do you know what I'm about to ask you about, Slidekick?
What are you going to ask me about?
The Ouya.
Oh, see, I didn't know we were starting into our flop starter discussion already.
You know, amusingly, we're not. This is the last of our regular discussion.
Oh, I know. I just wanted to throw massive shade at...
You know, I'm actually going to call you out on that.
Why?
What is your problem with the Ouya?
You know, I have to admit, I received mine a couple months ago, unlike you, and I still haven't unboxed it.
So you're on an internet hate train.
Kind of. I mean, honestly, I was not impressed with their behavior at E3, and I've just, you know, I can't really hate on it fairly, because I have not personally been able to spend time with it and form my own opinion.
You know, I've been thinking a lot about this, specifically Ouya, because I see a lot of hate getting thrown, and as I wait, and I'm getting closer and closer to getting my Ouya, it arrived, finally. Unfortunately, I wasn't there to pick it up, so
oh, like
it is
2 weeks after its retail launch date?
Yeah, no, and certainly
oh, have fun with a flop controller, too.
Yes, and that's fine. Like, I don't even know. Do you know what the controller feels like, or have you just been told it's bad, so you're assuming
it's
bad?
No, remember we talked about the faceplate issues in the...
I remember, but maybe it's not that bad. Like, I can't see.
You know,
it
honestly,
sure.
I've heard from backers who have had... Well, I haven't heard personally from backers, but I was reading about backers who were like, hey, I got one of the launch Ouyas. I need my controller fixed. And Ouya has really been kind of canned response about trying to get it replaced. I feel like I was reading this on Facebook, or like, so I don't know if it's somebody that I actually know, or if it was like in one of the gaming groups that I'm a member of on Facebook. But I feel like it was like not just a article; it's like people that I actually interact with.
I've seen that on Twitter, definitely Twitter.
Maybe
Facebook, and you know, you're definitely. I think that it is more likely than not that I'm going to have some issues with the controller.
Although PS3 controllers compare with it.
I just want to play... Oh, PS3 controllers compare with the Ouya?
I don't know wirelessly, but USB, yes.
See, that is awesome, because that right there, like, then I don't really care about the Ouya controller.
I think 360 can, too. I don't know.
Maybe the 360 corded ones can, because you can just plug those into computers.
You know, I think my main issue going, this is like without having actually played it, is that when we were talking about the idea of Microsoft, I think, was this on our Xbox 180 Micro that we talked about this, about the idea of Microsoft perhaps trying to do more like a Apple hardware release cycle, is that I didn't even really think of the possibility that that's what the Ouya is going to try to be. And it's like, oh, well, I pledged for an Ouya, and we're probably going to see Ouya 2 come out and be better. And, like, you know, not in the normal amount of time for a, that we're used to for console releases. You know, we're used to at least a good 5 to 6 years, sometimes more, between major console releases. And, you know, we were just being speculative in terms of what the X-Bone might be pushing, but with Ouya, I mean, I
it is. It's their stated intention that it's a $99 device, so that you feel comfortable, you know, a year from now buying a new $99 device. Over a 5-year console cycle, you'll be paying the same $500 that you would be paying for a next-gen console.
That's true. I guess I just didn't really think about the impact of that.
And I mean, I guess for me, the thing is, you know, it's largely a phone, like, it's basically a device to play phone games on
your
TV.
I've seen a lot of people be like, no, just because it runs Android does not mean it's a phone. It's just an iOS. Oops.
No, I'm not saying that
if it ran iOS, it would be a lot more stable, probably. Oops.
That's probably true. But I'm saying, I mean, I do think it's largely a device to play phone games on your TV.
You know, to be fair,
I don't see that as a bad thing. I don't have an Android device at all. I'm kind of interested in seeing what's in that ecosystem right now.
Yeah, so, you know, I have to say that my snarkiness about it is probably a lot of internet hive mind sort of reaction. Yeah. I have to say I haven't hooked mine up because I am in the process of moving IRL, which is super exciting, but you know, I don't have.
And if it does impact the Game Buoy recording schedule for the next month, listeners, we're sorry, but real life stuff does happen.
Oh, I don't anticipate it will, but you know.
Maybe I'll do an episode with a guest host, and not you. You look so hurt.
I want you to talk about. I have to apologize. I'm trying to look up Game Buoy heartthrob Matt Kahn of GamerX fame. He was an early adopter of Ouya. He's been kind of on the fence, but he has really been into this one game. And I'm trying to find
Towerfall.
Towerfall.
Because I've heard a lot of people talk about Towerfall.
Thank you. I was just trying to find where he was talking about it, but
I'm actually going to go pick up, as soon as we're done recording, I'm going to go pick up my Ouya from my apartment rental office, like, today. And mainly the reason why I'm so excited to do so is Towerfall. I've heard so much good about it from not just Matt Kahn, but a lot of people.
Yeah.
A lot of people are calling it, like, the Ouya killer app or whatever.
That's what I've heard, so I was a little bit reluctant, but, you know, I'm kind of trying to keep an open mind now. You know, a lot of my snark, like I said, was just based on what I've heard. And, you know, I guess there's always room for improvement, both in public relations sort of ways. You know, it's just been really surprising because we were really positive about the Ouya early on and we were really vocal about it. And then, you know, the shipping drama happened.
Well, you know, and I was just thinking
about
this. Tour
drama happened, and, you know,
I was just thinking about this, though, and I have to admit, this is effectively an independent company at the time of kickstarting. I know that they
right.
have some pretty major corporate backing now, but this was an independent company that made a new hardware device, that crowdfunded a new hardware device, and then got it produced, mass-produced, and shipped it with a working operating system, admittedly some bugs, you know.
Uh-huh. And not the full functionality that they had promised.
Well, although it's all being patched in pretty speedily from what I understand.
Yeah, but not for the Kickstarter backers.
Hold on. Mostly on schedule. Mm-hmm. Now, these are tasks that Nintendo and Sony and Microsoft have all tried to do and at various times in their careers failed and had to delay products. Huge times. Have had, you know, thousands of hell, look at the Xbox 360, which the launch units literally had a 1 out of 2 failure ratio. And I would say Ouya
Red
probably,
Ring to fail them all.
I mean, you know, we joke about Red Rings. At
knocking
this
on
point.
Wood, I have a 360 that's still running, so knock
it
on
wood. Was it a launch 360?
I know. No, it was not a launch 360.
Because those launch ones literally 1 out of 2 failed. To Red Ring.
Still, but mine is like the still original style of 360. They're at their third hardware revision now, right?
Yeah, yeah. And in terms of internal hardware, they're on their like fourth or fifth. But my point is really that it's easy to look at the individual failures of the Ouya and be like, oh, that's awful, they are a mess.
Yeah, and
but
I can't,
if you take a step
you know,
back and really critically think about it, what they have done is tremendous. And again, I would say that this has been a better hardware launch, even with all of its problems. I would say it's a better hardware launch
than the Vita.
Than the 360 had.
Than the Vita.
Until we get to a point where a huge majority of Ouyas straight up don't work, I would say that this has been a successful launch.
And you know, that's interesting to think that maybe a lot of the reason that it's getting so much shade thrown at it is because it was crowdfunded.
Well, I think it is, and I think
people take it more personally. Like, we put our money into the development of this console, and it's not delivering what we want, which is controllers that aren't broken.
But if you take a step back and look at it, like, these are all issues that every hardware manufacturer in every industry has.
That's true. And, you can't blame Julie Ehrman personally for the janky controllers or the shipping drama or the rude PR people at E3, well, outside of E3 because they weren't actually at E3, but... You know, I think it's just interesting. The interesting part for me was that we were so hopeful about it, and then there were a lot of bumps on the road that we didn't anticipate, although maybe now we should have anticipated them. And I feel like I was talking to Space Pirate Ben about this, but it could have just been something I read on the internet, is that for Kickstarters with that involve, like, hardware sort of thing, whether it's a gaming console or just, you know, some sort of, you know, something that's manufactured, like a, electronic device or whatever, that you need a working prototype before you can even launch your Kickstarter. I feel like I heard that or read that somewhere, so.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea, and I worry it would stifle things like Ouya, which, again, in case I haven't made this clear, I know that I've said some negative things about Ouya, especially before my console got to me and I was looking at... Mm-hmm. retail units in the store and being like, mine is not even here yet, and I've literally paid for it like 6 months ago.
Yeah.
But when I really step back and let go of bias, I really have to acknowledge that I really think that what they've done and their sort of success percentage, like, okay, there's been some bumps or whatever, but overall this has been tremendous, and I would call it an outrageous success, truly.
Well, you know, and going into the, you say that you worry about the Ouya, but going into the next one, they'll probably be like, okay, hopefully, I mean, I can't speak for Julie and her company, but, hopefully they can be like, okay, these were the issues that we encountered. I mean, you know, there weren't like, LOL, you didn't get your console. The backer email that went out about the delayed shipping, they were very apologetic about it, but, you know, it doesn't change the fact that it sucked. That said, I'm hoping and I have faith that going into the next iteration of Ouya, that, you know, the company will be mindful of what went well, what didn't go well, and how to improve it. Because, I mean, that's what any good hardware developer should do. See Sony.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm 100% with you. And I honestly, I think that they will. I truly, again, you looked at, earlier you were saying that you looked at the iterative release schedule of the Ouya, and, you know, having an Ouya 2 in just a year as being a negative, but again, because the price point is so low, I feel like there is a positive to there, and
that's
that is,
true.
With each iteration, presumably they'll work out these kinks, and I think they'll have a really competitive, potentially a really competitive console, as, again, not like a full-fledged, like, tier of console, like, I don't think
directly compete.
Thank you. For some reason, I just could not say that word.
Well, but we're kind of starting to see now this possibility of this sub-market in the console.
Yeah, if that happens, and that is sort of that new tier, I really think that Ouya could be the top of that.
What's the rumor now that Google, I mean, this has nothing to do with Kickstarter necessarily, but Google is rumored to have some sort of game console thing that they want to do.
Yeah, and I would expect an Ouya, but...
Which is, like, so much of a mist of a rumor that we probably won't even be talking about it, and rumor has it, until something a little more concrete materializes. Apple has always been pegged as, like, oh, yeah, Apple's going to put out one, but we have yet to see it, so it would be interesting to see if this evolves into a sub-market of casual...
Yeah.
And because, you know, Apple putting, and this is just totally not turning into a Kickstarter conversation anymore, but, you know, Apple would totally be like, oh, it's a family, it's an all-in-one.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah,
it would be like, it's your entertainment need. It connects with your iPod. You can have iTunes, iOS account sync, whatever, Game Center, blah, 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 you know. So, I mean, there's a very real possibility. But, I mean, to be fair, Ouya has kind of really opened up the discussion for this sort of new market. So, to tie it back into Kickstarter. So we might almost have to do, you know, we kind of done a lot of micros lately, but we might have to do an Ouya micro once we've had some time to spend with it.
Yeah, that would be great. I actually think that'd be a really compelling, I mean, unless we do a full Ouya episode, but we have a really packed schedule
we
this
do.
Year. So maybe that'll be good since we, our next episode probably won't be a few weeks off. Maybe that'd be a good time for a Ouya micro.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on. And in fact, we're going to have to start kicking up the speed here.
Yes,
we have been talking about Kickstarter
have we
for
gone
more
three
than
hours?
An hour.
Have we gone 3 hours yet?
We're only at an hour 42 right now.
Oh, okay.
But let's keep in mind, when we started talking about Kickstarter, we were like 40 minutes in.
So. Oops. Sorry about it.
Yeah, so we'll see. So, let's just real quick get...
All y'all are great, by the way, putting up with our 2+ hour episodes. You've all been pretty vocal about, you know, we love hearing game movies, so... Love you. Continue.
I want to just talk about a couple of sort of notable failures.
LOL.
In the Kickstarter space. And the last one is going to be a little different because it actually was successful and seems to be the first high-profile scam.
Yep.
But first, let's all just throw back our heads and have a good laugh about Shadow of the Eternals.
Oh, goodness. Oh, good. Ah, ha, 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 ha. Oh, goodness me. You know, the funny thing is that whole scene in Final Fantasy X was, like, actually had layers to it.
I agree, but...
I still like doing that laugh.
Yeah, me too. You know, Shadow of the Eternals, we sort of called it out.
Yeah.
You know, this had a lot of bad blood in its development. Of course, we love... Oh my gosh, I can't believe I just forgot the name of the game that it's a sequel to.
Was it
Eternal Darkness?
Eternal Darkness, yeah. Sanity's Requiem or something like that?
Yeah, yeah. In fact, I have a copy of it in the other room, like, this very moment. I love that game.
Great game.
I wanted this follow-up to be a hit, but, you know, they've had allegations of harboring child pornographers. Embezzlement allegations. They have,
well,
you know,
I don't know if
Chris Dyack is always his own issue.
Now let me clarify. I wouldn't go so far as to say harboring child pornographers. There was one of the main guys was convicted of child pornography charges, which is horrible. But you know, you can't really peg that on the team unless they're like, "Oh, we know that he has child pornography," and we're still. But you know, they were pretty damning of him in their press release, weren't they?
Yes, actually, they. You know, I say harboring because we're approaching it from the topic of laughter, but there's actually nothing funny about child pornography at all. It's not a funny topic. It's really gross. And the developers of
Shadow of the Eternals.
No, I was just swallowing because I have a frog in my throat because we've been talking for nearly 2 hours.
You've been playing too much Frog Fractions.
Yes. Oh, I love Frog Fractions. Anyway, you know, these allegations, they're not a joke, and the company really did step away from this man and his detestable actions.
Yeah.
Really quite thoroughly. And appropriately, I would say.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's just an unfortunate that has cast yet further shadows on this whole mess.
It's just like nothing can go right for these guys. We called them out, you know, for the Dennis Dyack stuff and for the embezzlement stuff. It's just, they cannot catch a break. I would love this game to get made. I would love for it to be great. But it's just, it's been such a weird and plagued cycle trying to get it off the ground that I just don't possibly see how they could at this point.
Yeah.
I hope they do. I still, even still, really truly hope that they do. I would absolutely buy their game. I'd absolutely play it. But I wouldn't back it.
Yeah. Sigh. A lot of heavy stuff to talk about. So let's talk about the Echo to the Dolphin spiritual sequel. You know, I just have to say, I have to confess, I didn't spend a lot of time with Echo the Dolphin. This is a little side note. Captain Spike was reminding me of how much of a crazy sci-fi game that Echo the Dolphin was. Like, fighting aliens in space. Echo the Dolphin. Like, I totally forgot about the crazy sci-fi elements of it, so. This Kickstarter was called Big Blue Ocean, and you're a little more familiar with this one than I am, so do you want to take the...
It's weird to me, you know. I've played through the Echo the Dolphin games, you know, 1 and 2 and Defender of the Future, and not all the way through the CD, Mega CD one, but...
Well, that was the one I had, and it was kind of a mess.
And, you know, there was one for the old, what, like, the Pico kids system?
Well, that was probably, like, Learn to Swim with Echo the Dolphin. Side note, I kind of wanted a Pico just because it had Sonic the Hedgehog content that
you
couldn't get anywhere else.
You would.
And I'm like, oh, but it's for kids.
Maybe I should buy one.
Oh my god.
How much do you think Picos cost in this day and age?
I don't know. How much does an Apple Bandai Pippin cost?
I don't know.
Now there's a topic for an episode.
Yeah, it really is.
Anyway, Big Blue Ocean.
Well, okay, so first off, let me just address, yeah, you're right. Echo the Dolphin is sci-fi as shit, and I love it.
Kind of
I
like
played
the way...
all of these games. The first Echo the Dolphin, I used to know kids that I went to school with who couldn't figure this out, but the game really starts in that first bay or whatever by jumping out of the ocean. You initiate the game starting because aliens come and like steal all of the sea life away.
Man, that's more sci-fi than Family Matters. I mean, think about it. Steve Urkel made a sexy clone of himself, always had these inventions, and then in the series finales, went into space.
Yeah, no, that show is super secretly, or not so secretly, sci-fi.
And then they replaced Harriet Winslow, because what's-her-face and left.
Anyway, this is not Family
This
Matters,
is not TGIF Bowie.
Oh my god, we should do TGIF Bowie.
Maybe so.
April Fool's 2015, please look forward to it.
We'll see about that. Hopefully sooner.
But yeah, so, you know, Echo the Dolphin, super sci-fi, I love that game. But for whatever reason, like, they were looking for so much money for Big Blue that, like, I mean, I backed it, even backing it knowing, like, there's no way this game is ever getting funded. Like, people are not throwing down that much money for an Echo the Dolphin spiritual revival. And unfortunately, you know, that's exactly what happened. Like, nobody was here for that.
And then they ended up doing Little Blue Ocean, or did that even flop? Like,
I don't believe that's a
dolphin.
I don't think that's a thing that happened.
Was that just a stretch goal or something?
I believe so.
Well, poor Big Blue Ocean flopped like a dolphin. A beached dolphin. A beached dolphin. I've been struggling to say that. Now, last and least... Do we want to say at least? Probably so, because...
Yeah, and why don't you go in on this, because I'm actually a little fuzzy on some of the details.
You know, we've talked about this on Game Buoy before, so we're not going to spend a lot of time on it, but Code Hero is what we're talking about. You might recall that we talked about Code Hero raising this money. It was supposed to be a really cool way to, you know, kind of get kids into coding, and it seemed really promising, and then basically... People heard nothing, you know, speaking to the communication part. And then people had done a little research. This is what we talked about on Game Movie prior, that he had some sort of, like, women's clothing company or something that folded. And it was, like...
They made, like, military corsets or something.
Yeah. And
like fetish wear for women, which, by the way, is freaking awesome.
Yeah, but, like, apparently it was, like, a startup that never started up. So it was just... really shady, and I haven't really heard. It's kind of been quiet on the Code Hero front. I haven't heard anything since, good or bad, so kind of still kind of nebulous. But, I mean, really an example of Kickstarter, you know, this is kind of what we were all worried about, and I feel like we even talked about that when this news was breaking, you know, and this story was unfolding. That, you know, this is exactly the sort of risk that you run with a crowdfunded sort of thing. And why you've got to trust who you're backing, you got to know all that. So, you know, it's interesting. The thing that's interesting, before we move on to kind of our non-gaming, gaming-related Kickstarters, is to think of the article that... Like I said earlier in our discussion, the article that Ben Kuchera wrote, we were kind of like, he's kind of being a bit of a negative Nancy. I feel like at the time we were very, like, yeah, Kickstarter, and very, you know, optimistic about it. But I think one of the reasons we wanted to do a Kickstarter discussion today is that I think that we have a much more well-rounded look at Kickstarter, what different things can be done on Kickstarter, budget issues, the possibility of scams. You know, I feel like we can really speak more to the variety of the Kickstarter experience now. And, you know, I have to say that a lot of the things that Ben Kuchera did say, you know, they have kind of panned out. You know, there's been a lot of risks involved.
Yep, absolutely. And
I feel like that's something that we didn't quite dive into, you know, as Echo dives into the ocean at the dawn of an alien invasion, when we were doing our initial Kickstarter episode.
Yeah, well, I guess I had felt somewhat naively that people wouldn't take advantage that way.
Yeah. And oops, I kind of feel like, I think I kind of stepped into our wrap-up territory with that
comment. You did, but I think that's fine.
But we'll revisit it, so.
So why don't we start our last segment? So, we're going to be a little bit of a negative Nancy for the briefest of moments. We have two sort of sour taste in our mouth Kickstarters, and then two rather delightful Kickstarters that
yes.
we will be wrapping this this part of the discussion up with. Unfortunately, of course, the first two are two different podcasts that took to the Kickstarter sphere to request tens of thousands of dollars.
To record a podcast, which, by the way, we do with regular Everyday Materials. You can do it, too.
You can do it, too. And in fact, I think we're going to have a lot to say on that matter in the immediate future about just how easy you can get your content out on the web in a podcast.
Yes.
In the meantime, however, you know, Retronauts, whom obviously I am a fan of, literally, this show exists because of Retronauts in large part, and also Penny Arcade, whom I am less interested in listening to a podcast of, but still, you know, I know they have their fans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they both launched Kickstarters to do podcasts, to resurrect Retronauts and to bring, you know, Penny Arcade's podcast back.
And this was Penny Arcade's second Kickstarter. They had, like, $1 million Kickstarter to remove ads from their front page or something.
And the revival of the podcast was a stretch goal in that
yes, important footnote.
So in both of these cases, of course, you know, $50,000+ ended up getting backed for these projects. And, I mean, I guess that's cool if that's what people want to put their money out for. You know, do what you do, but I have to say, as a podcaster who has very limited resources to put this show together, you know, I do the best.
Well, we're spending all our money on video games so we can talk about video games.
You know, it's funny. I was just telling someone the other day, I mean, it's cool that I play more games than ever before because I finish more games than ever before so I can talk about them on the show because I wouldn't feel right talking about games I hadn't completed. But at the same time, I'm also buying more games than ever before, and I already bought a lot.
Hey, Game Buoy Kickstarter.
Right? Supply us with games.
Supply
so
us with
can
games.
Talk to about them. No, seriously, the next purchase I need to make for the show, I'm just like, oh, girl. So, I mean, I would never kickstart that, though, because I would feel really bad about going out to our audience and being like, give us money so that we can have a good mixing board. Like, no,
yeah.
I would never. So, I don't know. It just, there seems like a lot of audacity on the part of Retronauts and the Penny Arcade. Podcast.
Speaking of which, Audacity is a free software program that you can use to record podcasts.
Yeah, Audacity. I'm recording using it right now. And, you know, for me, a podcast is something I do because I love talking about games. I love talking to the community about games. Some of the connections and friends I have made while podcasting have been, like, just really rewarding
yeah.
relationships. So,
you know, I just have to say, and we are big fans of classic Retronauts. We are big fans of the late great 1UP. I think Jeremy Parrish is an awesome guy, but it almost seems like there's kind of this general feeling of like, oh, we got a lot of money, now we have to deliver this content. Instead of like, yeah,
this is great, we want to podcast, and now we have the resources to do so right.
It just kind of bums me out because, you know, it's kind of like a when one of your heroes doesn't really have their heart in it. And I mean, I don't mean to suggest anything negative. It just almost seems like a chore for these guys. And, you know, that's that's just a little bit of a bummer. But maybe we're just being negative Nancys. Maybe you, you know, the first Retronauts is already up. And, you know, it's... You know, I mean, it's Retronauts, but it's just... There's just something... There's something kind of missing for me. And you just would think, with the support that they got, that it would be a very, kind of uplifting. I don't know. I feel bad. It's like...
Well, you know, Jeremy Parrish, and I think he's a really talented guy. I think he produces a lot of content that I'm really into. But he has been pretty open about the fact that he doesn't love podcasting. And I just kind of feel like that whole sort of attitude has really...
Yeah, I mean...
I wouldn't say infected, but it has colored sort of how Retronauts is
and, you perceived. Know, I mean, honestly, maybe he should have just been like a consulting... person for Retronauts, and then let someone who really wanted to host do the hosting part for them. I mean, we love podcasting. That's why we podcast. So, you know, it's just kind of a bummer. And then, you know, Penny Arcade, I'm a little bit less hesitant to, I don't want to say talk smack about, but, you know, they've recently had some issues with making, like, transphobic comments.
You know, I agree that that's a thing that happened, and...
Which is unrelated to the Kickstarter
appropriate
part.
For us to discuss in a later episode, but that's not what we're here to talk about right now.
I'm just saying that my overall attitude towards Penny Arcade has really become soured over the past couple months.
Yeah, I
And one of the reasons is because of this Kickstarter thing, and the Kickstarter... spawned from a Kickstarter. It's like Kickstarterception.
Kickception.
Moon.
Anyway, Moon. Yeah, so in both of these cases, you know, I felt like it was worth bringing up that, you know, Retronauts and Penny Arcade have both kickstarted their podcasts, and, you know, that's good. The first Retronauts episode has already gone up. I don't know if the Penny Arcade one has or not, but, you know, good on them. If their audience is willing to pay for that content, that's cool. The two just... really positive things that I've seen people from the games community use Kickstarter to fund is Anita Sarkeesian's Tropes vs. Women in Games
video
broadcasts,
series.
Video series, and the Gamer X convention.
Which is kind of also really spawned Gamer Connect as more of a kind of, you know, because Gamer X, which it has been for a long time now. Is a once a year, hopefully every year thing, but, you know, Gamer Connect is kind of a way for that community to, you know, stay active when the con's not going on, so, and, you know, kind of transcending the con. So, I mean, that's an example of really, taking, you know, because what they had wanted to do, and I'm just kind of going into this a little bit, because I know some of the guys on the Gamer Connect team. You know, they had wanted to do, like, a mobile app, Gamer Connect, as a stretch goal, and I don't think that stretch goal, you know, they definitely got, more funding than their goal was, which was awesome, but I don't think that, they quite had made it to that stretch goal, but they still, you know, took their own time and hard work to put together this really cool social network that, you know, for gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgendered, queer, and ally gamers can kind of build a community. And, I mean, I think that's really a positive thing. And I need to touch on Tropes versus Women in Games. I personally think it's great. I do understand that even some feminists do have issues with Anita Sarkeesian's work. I personally feel that it's a great series so far.
I think she does a lot of the same thing we do, which is that, you know, we bring up topics and we talk a lot about them, but we don't necessarily tell people what to think.
Yeah.
I feel like I've seen a lot of people talk about how Anita Sarkeesian, she'll research these topics and then she'll talk about instances where they've been used and even in some instances possible, like, other things they could have done, but she doesn't really dig super deep into all of these alternate ideas necessarily. And I don't think it's her place to. I think it's I think it's a really good thing to have a collection of all of this here that is associated from just straight up, this is what I think, this is why you're wrong. Because, no, the point is to point this out so point this out to you so that you can think about it yourself.
Can think for themselves, yeah.
So that you can see the inequity. Not to tell you, this is inequity, but look at this and tell me, what do you see here? Because to me, I see something that is unequal and unpleasant.
I mean, I'm a very big fan of her academic presentation of tropes that women
am as well.
In games, that we see with women in games. You know, I feel it's very topical with the hashtag One Reason Why. And, you know, we've had a lot of issues with a lot of the grossness that women in gaming in the industry side of it face. So, I mean, I think it's been really interesting to see her look at the gaming part of it. I mean, like, dream Game Buoy episode would be to have her on talking about, you know, the stuff that she's doing. But, you know, she's a very busy woman. I doubt she even knows what Game Buoy is. But, you know, very definitely a Kickstarter, a gaming-related Kickstarter that has been very on the Game Buoy tip and very influential to us. I feel like we're going to eventually want to talk about a lot of the issues about that women in game face. Women in games, not in game. So, I think that about does it, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
So, you want to wrap this puppy up?
Oh my god, like a little dog wrapped up?
I'm thinking more like pups in a blanket.
Oh, cute. Is that like pigs in a blanket? Is that food? Because I like
Yeah,
food.
Yeah, that's
I'm kind of hungry.
That's another name for pigs in a blanket, is pups in a blanket.
I've never heard that one, but I like it. And it makes sense because they're little tiny dogs. Well, hot dogs, you know.
No, they're sausages, actually.
Hot dogs are sausages in my head. They're like the
same but
thing.
I've never had pigs in a blanket with a hot dog sausage.
That would be awesome, though.
That would be kind of brunchy, wouldn't it? Wow, we're hungry.
Oh, man, yeah. Oh, my God. You could wrap them up in pancake batter.
Well, that's what pigs in a blanket are.
See, I've always had pigs in a blanket done with croissants. I've never had them done with
pancakes. That's a completely different thing to me. I've always thought of pigs in a blanket as a sausage wrapped in a pancake.
Yeah, I've always had it done with croissants. I make them myself, in fact. They're quite good.
We do that all the time. But, you know, I just always thought of that as something else, so.
No, where I grew up, that was pigs in a blanket.
Interesting. Croissants. Next episode of Game Buoy, the regional differences of pigs in a blanket.
Ah, on food buoy.
Food buoy.
So, let's wrap this up. Let's wrap this puppy up. So overall, Slidekick, how would you describe your experience slash satisfaction with projects you have backed?
You know, honestly, most of the stuff I backed hasn't really come out yet, except for Ouya. So, I can't really...
Oh, you mean Puya? LOL.
Okay, Kotaku.
I'm sorry, continue.
You know, I think that my experience is more about how my thoughts have evolved, which was our next talking point. So I'll let you speak more to this first point.
I've mostly so far been very satisfied. The projects that I've backed several that have come in, and, they've all been really good. I don't know if it's a matter of the, you know, be freedom from publishers and that sort of pressure, mm-hmm. but I feel like I've seen a lot of really, unconventional game design and some choices that have been a little risky and or daring, and some littler games that I wouldn't have expected to really see. So
yeah.
I've been really happy with it. I would overall describe my experience and satisfaction level as pleasant. Like, agreeable. Like, yes. Good. So, how have your thoughts on Kickstarter evolved in the past year?
You know, I started to kind of touch on this earlier. This is what I was referencing as into dipping into the wrap-up. I think that I've become a lot more aware of the risks, and, you know, I kind of went into it blindly at first. I was like, Kickstarter, oh, yeah, I want to pledge this. I think that I'm a lot more cautious. I'm a lot more likely to do more research, which, I mean, is a good thing. I mean, I think that every consumer should do that for anything that they invest their money in, particularly crowdfunding, but, you know, just in general. So I think that seeing all of the things that we've talked about today have really kind of made me more, giving me a more well-rounded viewpoint of it, which is not good nor bad. And I mean, a thing that's important to point out is that it's not Kickstarter, the organization that we're being like, ooh, you know, like this.
No, Kickstarter, I think, is a remarkable tool. Like,
it's just, it's interesting to see how this whole gaming Kickstarter thing has just kind of spun off into its own thing. And it's a very big topic in gaming right now. I mean, there's all sorts of cool, like, board game things. There's cool gadgets that are coming out on Kickstarter. So, but as far as the gaming part of it, I think that it's an interesting evolution. And, you know, I still think it could be a great thing. I just think I'm a lot more cautious about it now. And yourself?
You know, it's interesting that you say that. I really feel like, man, this is such a masturbatory answer. I feel like a lot of the
points... Whoa, we're still on air, dude.
Let the record show that I'm shaking my head at Slidekick.
You were talking about a masturbatory answer. Continue, continue.
I really
masturbate
feel...
away.
Ew, Slidekick. No, I just mean,
awkward.
I really feel like, you know, like a year ago that we really nailed it. Like, I feel like everything we said then is still true. Like, it's cool to back projects you like, the ones that people are really passionate about and, you know, that you can see, like, this is a real thing that they really are passionate about. Like, I feel like, you know, as long as you do a little buyer beware and you check out who you're backing, I feel like things are mostly going really well. The
yeah.
only real major failure in this sphere that I can think of is that Code Hero issue that we discussed. And if I'm being completely honest, if anyone had like really backtraced it before it had happened, they probably would have found this battle corsets business and probably that whole dialogue would
yeah.
have happened differently.
Well, I mean, again, doing your research, so important point.
So, I mean, my thoughts have changed in that I feel more strongly... I feel more strongly that people need to do the research and need
mm-hmm.
to make good choices to succeed at Kickstarter.
Yeah, true.
But I also feel like, again, especially when I look at stuff like, you know, Project Gianna or, you know, Leisure Suit Larry, or especially FTL. FTL is really the gold standard for me here.
FTL, FTW.
And again, also Ouya, because I still think that's really quite rather... really quite rather impressive what Ouya did.
Regardless
I
of
think
what
that,
we end up thinking about it
well,
after
yeah,
having hands-on
yeah,
experience.
The that they got it together, that they got together what they promised
it's
effectively, it with some issues, but I would more or less say they succeeded. I think it was a tremendous victory, and it really makes me feel like Kickstarter can work. My thoughts now on Kickstarter are that I feel like it has been proven.
Yeah, because we were kind of on the defensive, weren't we?
Oh, I think so. I think everyone that was thinking about it, maybe some of us were a little too optimistic. Certainly I was a little too optimistic. But overall, I think it has proven that it does work.
Yeah, so spend your money responsibly. Do your research.
So are you more likely to back fewer or more games projects via Kickstarter in the future?
You know, that's a good question, because it's not necessarily that I'm likely to back fewer, but I'm more likely, like I said, to do my research, which might result in backing fewer than I would have, you know, a year ago. I think that I'm more likely, and this is something that you've always touched on, that $15 pledge point is kind of a sweet spot for you. I think I'm more likely to do that as well. I mean, Ouya's really the only one, aside from, Gamer X, Gamer Connect, which I was very happy to pledge, you know, a higher level to. And we'll be seeing you at the VIP party, if any of you are going to be there.
With Pandora Box!
Yeah. That said, I really do think, and typically I do stick to that $15 to $20 sweet spot. You know, I think that what we've seen, good and bad, has kind of really affirmed that, yeah, that's the good sweet spot to pledge at. And yourself?
I'm almost certain to back more. As
really?
I get more Kickstarters back.
That are good.
Successfully, it makes me feel more and more appropriate. Like, this is a good way to spend my $15 per game. Like, if the games I want to play don't currently exist, but I can help them come into existence by, you know, just throwing $15 in that direction,
mm-hmm.
well, I feel like, you know, this has been proven to be a thing that works.
Yeah.
So I'll keep doing it. I'm in.
So you're caught up in the Kickstarter.
I am caught up in the Kickstarter.
Kickstarter!
So, you know, and I think with that, it's time to move on. I think we are done with our Kickstarter
discussion.
Yeah,
we gotta wrap this puppy up.
Let's wrap this
on the
puppy
bigger scale.
Up. We gotta talk about a very interesting rumor.
You say classy rumor?
I was, but it's not that classy. You want to talk about What's Up? Because I feel like we've skipped talking about What's Up for a hot minute.
Yeah.
And then we'll just cut straight to our feedback.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's good. You know,
we're at the 2-hour, 15-minute mark.
Yeah, and we don't like to cut out our, recurring segments, but you know, sometimes for the sake of time and for your ears, we'll just have to revisit them at a later date. So, let's cue the Adele music.
Rumor has it.
So, we're reporting this one. We're bringing it to you as a rumor. Only because, even though I have seen this run as fact on several other sites and several blogs, I haven't yet seen the article it refers to myself, and so I'm hesitant to just straight up confirm.
And Joystick ran it as a rumor.
Oh, yes, they did. Final Fantasy X HD, according to this week's Famitsu, has a new 30-minute-long drama scene added to the end of the game at the end credits.
Watch, it's just 30 minutes of ha 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 ha! No, actually, that's really cool because, you know, I'm always down for new content. Presumably, it's at the end of, no, wait, hold on, is it, okay, for some reason I had it in my head that it was at the end of 10-2, which I guess I'm a little less excited now. I thought it was going to, like, be a way to, like, oh, tying in the whole story together, but that's cool. Maybe it'll, like, not bridge the gap necessarily, but, you know, might kind of make it a seamless transition into 10-2 HD, so.
Well, and the reason why this is a rumor is, to me, like, a video like that already exists. It was released separate from the games. In the U.S., it was released with an issue of, like, official PlayStation magazine or something.
Really?
It was called, like, The Eternal Calm.
Huh.
And it took place between the games as meant as, like, a bridge.
Interesting.
And so I can't help but wonder, like, is this that they're talking about and just now it's on the disc? Is it going to lead into, like, a prequel, like a Final Fantasy X-0? Because, you know, initially when Final Fantasy X-2 was being made, they were initially going to make a prequel about Jecht, Braska, and Auron as a team.
Would play.
And so, you know, maybe now they're like, oh, there's still love for this universe, let's do that. And we'll lead into it with this movie.
Let's just do Final Fantasy 8-10 All-Stars Bro Squad with Laguna, Team Laguna, and Team Jecht.
That should be an option in, like, Dissidia or something,
right?
I swear.
I was going to say, as long as it's not, like, Revenant Wings, which was apparently super floptastic.
Yeah, I was not a fan of Revenant Wings at all.
Bill.
Anyway, that's the rumor. I do believe that there's going to be some kind of new drama.
We just don't know if it's new or
We just don't know if it's new,
old.
New, or old new.
All right.
So, and with that having been said, let's see what...
I said, hey... What's going on?
So, what's going on?
Yes, what's going on?
What's
going on?
What's going on with you?
Well, what's going on with
me? Well,
we
haven't had What's Up in a while, like you said, so let's roll this off.
So, I finished DK, Donkey Kong.
Country Returns.
Country Returns. I 100%ed it.
Excellent.
So I feel very good about that. It was a difficult game, which just pushed me on forward even harder. Oh goodness, that sounded suggestive. I didn't mean it that way. I came back to the World of Warcraft. So that was delightful.
Yeah.
Are you still playing?
Are you still logging in?
Yeah. I'm in raid gear and stuff. Like, I've been doing...
Damn!
I've been doing, like, recent content now. Not the most recent content, but, like, one tier back.
Damn!
So, yeah, I'm in it to win it. I have a whole farm now with all of my farm slots.
Aww.
I'm exalted with several reputations.
Damn!
I have a couple of the exalted mounts that are freaking rad.
Damn!
There's one super adorable dragon that you have to raise to become a dragon that you can fly.
Ah, it's so cute!
That's so cute!
So yeah, no, I'm actually super into it. I've been playing a lot of Project X.
You've been playing Podcast Crosszone?
Project Crosszone.
Podcast Crosszone.
From which our podcast panel took its name.
Yes!
It's super great. It's probably the first, like, strategy crossover game that I really feel like the game mechanics are acceptable. Like, most of these games, you're there for fan service, but the game is awful.
Uh-huh.
This game is not awful. I like it. So, A+. And then the last one, of course, is Game and Wario.
Game and Wario?
Yes, Game and Wario.
Game and Wario.
Oh, like Game and Wario? No, Game and Wario.
You are Mr. Gay.
I really like Game & Wario. I haven't played all the games on it yet, though. I've only played, like, half of them, but I really liked what I've seen so far.
You know, prior to recording, Captain Spike and his partner and I were playing some of the Sketch one.
Sketch!
Which is basically, the thing is, it's basically Pictionary, but we were having so much fun with it. And, one of the criticisms that Game & Wario seems to have gotten is, oh, it's Nintendo Land 2, it's not as much of a focus on micro games. But, like, honestly, like, if the games are fun, who really cares? You know, that's kind of my thought on it. It doesn't mean that WarioWare is moving away from that. It's a WarioWare title, but it's not called WarioWare Game & Wario. It's called Game & Wario. So, you know, this might be an evolution of WarioWare, and we'll continue to see the WarioWare franchise evolve on handheld consoles like 3DS.
I don't think we've seen the end of WarioWare. I just think we've seen another tier of Wario game.
Exactly, which I'm always in approval.
Which I'm for, yeah. I'm
always approval of Wario.
I do not care about reuse of IP so long as the game ideas are new and good. And
I feel like Nintendo was kind of talking to that point recently, weren't they?
Well, they really were. That, you know, they'll often put new game ideas behind, you know, familiar faces so that consumers will feel more comfortable picking them up. To me, that's just a fact. Like, people, as much as people say they want new IPs, they don't buy new IPs.
Yeah.
So, you gotta do what you gotta do to get your game ideas out there.
You know who has never started his own game that I know of?
Who?
Waluigi!
That's not a real character. Stop making things up.
Maybe somewhere in an alternate darkest timeline that's the year of Waluigi right now.
Oh hell.
Waluigi!
Stop. And what have you been playing?
I'm going to roll some of these off really quickly. This is, like, dating back to weeks ago, because we haven't had a What's Up since our last time. I've done some of that, blah, blah. I've picked up some titles on Wii U Virtual Console, including Super Mario Bros. 2 and Super Metroid. You know, both really great to play on the gamepad, but as I've mentioned, I'm in the process of moving. Haven't done as much console gaming. I also got into, World of Warcraft, Mists of Pandaria. Well, I mean, just World of Warcraft. I've worked on leveling my monk. I've had a lot of fun with him. Again, unfortunately, in the process of moving, I haven't really been able to spend a lot of time. So, because I've been in the process of moving, I've been spending a lot of time with my 3DS, particularly with Animal Crossing New Leaf. I actually got it, I think I mentioned on the Game Buoy Micro 1, I picked it up at the store at the Best Buy Nintendo Experience. And, I actually started out a little slow with it, kind of like, just doing a little bit each day. But now I pretty much put in, I would say, a good 3 hours a day on Animal Crossing. You know, I go to the island a couple times farm for golden stags. I made about a million bells the other day because my retail shop was selling, not selling, was paying premium for golden stags. So I was like, well, damn, I better make three trips. So I made a million bells in a day and paying off my loans. So that's awesome.
Which is crazy to me. Like, I have been playing this game since the night it came out, and I definitely have not even gotten half a million bells ever.
Well, you got to get yourself to that island, boy.
I just don't have the patience for that. Like,
you know,
I
that's funny because there's something about Animal Crossing that I don't mind doing the grinding for. And some people might be like, "For what? It's so you can have a cute little house and animal friends." But there's just something so calming about it. And you might recall the story I've told about where I cut class for a week to play Wild World with my friends. And the worst part, I was already at college.
Like, was it Wild World? Oh, yeah, Wild World was the DS one. Yeah. City Folk was the Wii one. Okay,
I actually missed out on this, on City Folk. I was too busy with other stuff when that came out. But, you know, I'm having a great time. It's kind of touching because, you know, I'm in the process of moving. It's a new leaf in my life, and, you know, your character moves into a new town. And so it's kind of a cute little parallel with, you know, the new life I'm building.
Oh, what a cute synchronicity.
And too bad I don't have Tomodachi Collection New Life to be starting my new life with.
Aw, cute.
Get gay married. Except they patched it out. Oops.
Your relationships will become too strange. Don't do that.
Oh, no.
Anyway, moving on.
That already happens, knowing my love life. Oops.
Moving on.
And, you know, that's pretty much it. I talked about on air on OLR that Rob Roberts and I played Press Your Luck on PlayStation Network, and I kicked his butt. I feel like this was even prior to our E3 episode where we hung out with Rob Roberts and played Wheel of Fortune, but we just must have not gotten around. I don't think we had the What's Up on that episode, so I did very well on Wheel of Fortune. I was a fan of Wheel of Fortune on NES.
God, you're so good at Wheel of Fortune.
Thanks. I did not hear the sarcasm in your voice at all, or the bitterness. Love you, too. And, you know, unfortunately, we're going to have to bypass our Smash and Trash this week. But Jeremy Paramish over at US Gamer did do an article about New Leaf that was really cute. So kind of touching on my theme. Whoa, Jeremy Paramish touched on my thing. I don't think he'd want to do that. He's married. And
okay, tell me about our feedback. Let's stop this from happening.
And again, you know, with our kind of shake-up in episode topics, we didn't get a chance to put out a question of the week, so apologies for that. But we did have a little bit of feedback, less than usual, but we still love our feedback. Regarding the E3 blowout, Sky on Twitter, better known as Rob Roberts, said, "What did you blow out? Troll face."
I don't know, maybe like 120 candles on your birthday cake?
Oh, that's a little harsh.
You can consider that getting shots fired, baby.
We're going to be getting a hate tweet from that. Maybe some, I'm just hoping that podcast Cross Zone doesn't turn into an episode of the Jerry Springer Show.
Jerry,
and then
Jerry.
Some girl's like, "I'm here for my Jerry beads."
Oh! I am going to, if you come to the podcast Cross Zone,
you going to bring some Jerry beads?
I am going to have a bag of beads. And if you reference this moment and ask for your Jerry beads.
Well, I was going to say, are you going to ask dudes to flash you? But
No, because I want to give, well, I mean, if it's a dude, like, flash me. Wait, no, I don't want to be flashed. I just want to give people Jerry beads. So just ask me for your Jerry beads. You'll know me.
We better go hit OrientalTrading.com for the stock, the, like, gross of Marty beads.
That's a thing that's going to happen, so be quiet, you.
Well, we have talked about doing little, like,
moving on!
Oh! Okay, fine.
What's our feedback?
Jeremy Johnson from Koopa Club replied to our Game Buoy annual E3 blowout with, "Yes!"
Oh, like a snake.
Not necessarily like a snake, but just yes, with lots of S's.
Oh, okay.
So it was he was very excited. So, aww, hearts.
Yes, Jeremy. Yes.
Yes. Yes to your yes. And if you would like to troll face us or say yes or give us any feedback, we love your feedback.
We live for it.
You know, iTunes is a thing that's very large in the podcasting thing.
And we'd love to have your subscriptions over there.
Along with your ratings and reviews.
We like your ratings and reviews.
We like your Facebook
likes.
We like
your Facebook likes.
We fucking love Twitter.
No, but seriously, we fucking love Twitter. Like, if you follow my personal Twitter, at SpikePoint, I probably tweet, like, 40 tweets.
And I'm over at Slagkick. You know, we usually refer to our GameBuoy Twitter at GameBuoy.org with .org spelled D-O-T-O-R-G. But, you know, you can tweet at us, too, and if it's game-related, like, you know, we'll totally shout you out on air if you just tweet at us. We've done that in the past. We tumble on Tumblr, though, you know, Tumblr's kind of mostly for, like, boobs and stuff, but we have a Tumblr if that's where you follow us.
You know, teens.
Boobs and teens. Yikes. Let's not
boobs and teens.
No, let's not wander into that territory.
Oh, yeah, let's not. Let's definitely not. I meant teens that were 18 and up.
Yeah. Google Plus is a thing you can.
What
plus
is our URL there?
No, that joke isn't funny anymore.
Too close to home and too near the bone.
The X-bone.
Stop.
And of course, our home base is GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org, which, you know,
GameBuoy.org,
as always, has all our social links, including the link to our somewhat new.
I'm just gonna do that voice for the rest of the show.
Is it because that you still have that frog in your throat?
No, it's because I want to sound awesome.
I'm shaking my head at you right now.
Okay.
As always, you interrupted me because I was going to say that GameBuoy.org now has the social link to our somewhat new YouTube, which
Our new tube.
Do you say our boob tube?
No, I said our new tube.
Oh, I thought you said
it's our new YouTube. Our new tube.
New YouTube.
New tube. Oh my God! Continue.
Which has our videos of the Nintendo event. So you should watch those.
The Nintendo event. The Nintendo E3 experience at Best Buy.
So we can watch us playing games if you haven't done that yet. And as always, our complete episode archive, you can register for an account there. We have a couple people who comment over at GameBuoy.org on it.
And we totally dig those people.
Because, hey, comment systems on a website, what a novel idea.
I want to throw a shout-out over to Koopa Club. Obviously those guys are awesome, and if you like what we do, it's very likely that you'll like what they do.
You know, so I heard a rumor that a certain first mate might be appearing on their show in the near future.
That's an awful idea. They should not have him over.
Oh, my.
That's Koopa with a Q, Club with a K. I definitely advise you to check it out. Further, I really, 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 really think that you should go over and check out Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice, and from whom I have ever so blatantly stole so many of my cues.
And,
of
course,
you can find them over at the VOG Network, mm-hmm. Voice of Geeks.
Yep. And, of course, who I just appeared with, which I appeared on.
You appeared on them? Clutching my pearls.
I just guested on last week's episode of OLR, and, you know, really, you know, just one of the hallmarks of gaming radio. I mean, because they're a radio show and a podcast. That's like some real deal business. And, of course, over at the Voice of Geeks Network, you can also tune in to Horde House, which is now the place for all things online gaming, but never too seriously. Evolved from a WoW show, along with Girls Gone WoW, where you can get a female perspective on the world's most popular MMO. You know, definitely tuning in to them more than ever, because I'm back into WoW. Also like to shout out to Game Bar, who we'll be appearing with at Podcast Crosszone, and they're the podcast that fills your brain space with hours of gay video game commentary. And, of course, the Nerdgasm Network, the wildest group of shock jock video game radio bros that you'll ever come across. They do a lot of live stuff, too, these days, kind of following the vein of OLR. And last but certainly not least, Video Game Outsiders, a podcast about video gaming from the average player's perspective. Again, all of these podcasts are done by people who love podcasting. They do not raise $50,000 to, you know, try and get a podcast funded. And they just do it because they love it. What a novel idea, right?
What a great idea. You're so novel.
And, you know, at this point, sadly, Zelda Reorchestrated has sailed into the sunset on the great sea. But, you know, We like to still thank them for our great theme music. Still pouring out our 40s.
Still pouring out our 40s. With that, of course, it's time to go. As always, we greatly, greatly, deeply, truly appreciate all of you beautiful, kind, intelligent, brilliant folks out there that are still listening to us.
Yeah.
So we will be back with you shortly, possibly with a micro in just a week or two.
Yeah, hopefully so.
In the meantime, stay thinking, stay gaming, have fun, and I think I'm just going to do anime episode titles. So I'll start us off with Twilight Eye.
Twilight Princess?
No.
Is there anywhere besides IHOP? Right now, Pancake Bride. I feel like IHOP is the only place that's open right now.
And
stop. Blip, 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 blip. 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 Honk.
Oh my God, stop.
Stop. Stop. But that has to be on the wrong. Blip 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 bl